We reload this week's news with Reuters' Dave McKitty and WGN Radio's very own Amy Goof. We talk reality TV with Inc. columnist Tracy Swartz and another installment of The Frying Pan with Steve Gatlin. And now, here's your host, a man who, like Loverboy, is working for the weekend, Justin Kaufman.
That's how you say it's loving every minute of it. There's really only two Loverboy ways to go. I just covered them. Good evening, everybody. Justin Kaufman here. It's a download with you till 11 o'clock, 720 WGN. We, of course, are watching the NHL draft as the Chicago Blackhawks picking a 26th pick in the first round. Although, if you were listening to Rowan Anna, Rocky Wirtz may have let it out of the bag a little bit. There could be some changes, whether or not that's up or out or back or forth. We'll find out, and we'll keep you abreast of the situation. How about that? And also, Mark Karm's going to join us. Karm will join us after 7:30 to give us an update. But I don't know. I mean, they move pretty slow. I mean, the draft started, what, at 5:30, 6 o'clock? They're in the 10th pick. I feel like they do speeches in this. It's a little different than, you know, you watch the NFL
Zipping
draft.
Through,
it's like,
yeah.
Go, you got to go. With the NHL, they're like, I want to thank my managers. I want to thank my agents. There's a lot going on there. I'm very excited to be on the air. I've been talking about it. Friday nights are my favorite time. There's a bounce. There's an energy. There's a pulse in the city. And knowing full well that you may be listening to this on your way out to your beach house or possibly on the road to get away for the weekend or possibly just having a cold one on the porch or like me and Pete working, you know? And it's just great to have you here on a Friday night. It means a lot that you listen to WGN and to the download. We appreciate it. Also, of course, for those who may be stuck in traffic because of the accident on the Edens. Yeah, I know. It's not a great way to start the weekend. We'll do our best to try and keep you entertained and informed tonight. We're going to reload the news of the week. Dave McKitty in studio with Amy Goof. It's a great combo. Dave McKitty, famed longtime Sun-Times bureau chief in Springfield. Who now works at Reuters. We'll have him in tonight. He's got a lot to say about what's happening in Springfield with the special session. Talk about healthcare. We'll talk about all the stories. Of course, you know the format by now. It's the biggest story, the overreported, the underreported, the winners, the losers. Which story sucked you down the rabbit hole this week and which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 5,500 years from this week? That's what we'll get to. 312-981-7200 is the number. You can join in, of course, as we open the lines like we do for Reload every Friday night. Also tonight, like I said, Karm's coming up. We're not just going to talk Blackhawks. What a week for Chicago sports. And not just in the wins and the loss category but really about the personalities of these teams. It's amazing to think that three of the five major sports teams in Chicago are now full-on rebuilding. You got the Bears, which I don't even know what's happening with the Bears. You've got what we just saw with the Chicago Bulls last night with Jimmy Butler and the White Sox. The other two teams right now, one is tinkering, as we're seeing tonight after the trades and on the ice and Blackhawks. And one, I don't know what's happening with the Cubs. One is laying back, chilling in the weeds in June. A White Sox friend of mine was on Facebook today going, I love how Cubs fans think they're just going to turn it on. There's not too many cases in sports when you start to get deep into the season of a mediocre record where you're under a game under 500 and they turn it on and win 20 in a row. Mm-hmm. This might be the 2017 Chicago Cubs we're looking at.
Yeah, you're waiting for that, you know, yeah. They win 20 games in a month. But, yeah, we might be in September. You're like, they're just going to be hovering around 500.
I think that shows a lot of confidence, of course, and there's not a lot of experience coming off of a World Series championship for the Chicago Cubs fans, but there is a lot of confidence in this team and all the people and what we saw last year. But I think we all can agree as sports fans in Chicago, there's a missing magic on the north side. Last year at this time, you knew it. You had a feel. Mm-hmm. We were playing the nickname game.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday night, we're like, this team's going to win the World Series. Let's get their formal nicknames on the books. We're not doing that this year. A lot to talk to with Karm about what's going on the north side. I mean, they won last night, which was nice. But a long way to go, and they got an 11-game road trip they're on right now, so we'll see about that. So we'll talk a little bit about that with Carm. Coming up at 9:30, fast becoming one of my favorite segments, Tracy Swartz from the Ink column in the Chicago Tribune gives us Reality Check, where we check in on the reality television that is actually being produced right now, and it's Chicago Connections.
If you follow Tracy on social media, as I do, the amount of content that she produces
is amazing.
Yeah. If anybody even says Chicago on a late night television show, I don't know how she does that.
Yeah, if it's like a DVR game, if she's just got like a overheated TiVo.
Yeah.
Or she's up at night like switching around trying to get all the connections.
Man, that's incredible.
Yeah, because it's not like you can set it. Maybe you can set a Google alert for Chicago. Maybe she does. Maybe
yeah.
That's what it is. Next day kind of. But the stuff has to be out the next day. So if somebody says something on Colbert the night before about Chicago, you can't come out 24 hours later.
No, yeah. I mean, I wake up in the morning and boom, it's like the first thing I see. I'm like, oh, what did Timothy Simon say about Joe's on weed?
She waded into, we'll talk, I'm sure it'll come up in the reload this week, but she waded into the Hedy Weiss theater controversy, which is happening in Chicago, where the Chicago Sun-Times theater critic is under fire by local theater companies for what they say is a systemic disregard for their voice. And it's been an interesting fight because now more theaters have come out saying we're not going to give her comps anymore. And Steppenwolf started that. I don't know where they land on that, but there's some theaters that say they're not going to do it. And then just this afternoon, the Sun-Times finally put out an editorial of their own that defended Hedy Weiss. But it was, I saw that Tracy was one of the people who was actually continuing that story. So again, so much work that she does, right? So we'll talk with her. And of course tonight, and I know everybody's excited, the line's already lighting up for it, The Frying Pan is back for its monthly segment. Steve Gadlin, the entrepreneur, the inventor, the Chicago businessman, won on the popular television show Shark Tank for his idea, I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. He got a development deal with Mark Cuban. Before he brings new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to the download to workshop, to work out the kinks, to figure out if this is going to be the next I Want to Draw a Cat for You. And we open the lines and we let you ask him questions, put a little judgment in there, a little flavor, and really try to pick apart what he's trying to offer. And if it sticks, and I think, last year we did it every Friday night, and there was definitely a burnout.
Mm-hmm.
The ideas started to be like, I don't know, it's just like space travel. And you're like, oh, it's not even a thing. I like the new format of doing it once a month.
And I think on occasion, if something didn't really hit, some of the critique, the online critique, a little harsh perhaps, maybe got to him week after week.
Right, right. The colorful stuff that the people
Yeah.
It's a tough. Sometimes people can be cruel.
That's true.
But Steve's a tough guy. He wouldn't be in the business world without a thick
no doubt.
Skin. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's all coming up tonight on the download. A great show for you as you head out of town, like I said, or maybe taking a break, listening in the garage, in the driveway, get the old fold out. Just sit in the driveway. Strong move. Let all the neighbors know you're home. That's the way to go. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Roger Badish. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, so Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Now it's time for the carryout. This, of course, the nightly segment where I read the news so you at home, you don't have to. All right, here are today's top stories. Republican senators went all Kanye yesterday and released their secretive health care bill. They dropped it like it's hot. But just like Kanye, they're also tweaking it after the release. Today, the chorus of head scratchers took center stage as critics and media alike wonder what this bill accomplishes. It doesn't seem to repeal Obamacare or fix its problems, which include skyrocketing premiums. And with a vote set sometime next week, another GOP senator told the press, I don't like it. making a grand total of 5 Republicans against it, with 4 others still questioning. So this is far from over, since the GOP can't afford only 2 no votes from their side. Rand Paul, of course, says it doesn't go far enough to repeal federalized health care. And Ted Cruz said it didn't take care of the high premiums, which is what he was advocating for. But it seems to me that beyond both fringes, we've agreed on the principle that there should be universal health care. But we can't agree on who pays for it and how much it covers. That's about right. Think I nailed it? Dems want all coverage, and they want rich people taxed to pay for it. Republicans want some coverage, and they want someone else than rich people to pay for it. Okay? And that seems to be the only thing that Republican senators seem to be interested in, the tax cut, because they seem to be cutting corners in order to build the foundation. Instead of tax, they will just cut what service is not deemed a priority. And what's not a priority to them probably means it's a priority to all of us. That's the problem. And in the end, the biggest selling point they have is, yeah, you don't need to get insurance. If you don't want it, you don't need it. Which is foolish, because the minute anyone gets sick, they're going to be up on that marketplace buying policies in a hot minute. Which seems kind of like getting in a car accident and calling Geico after the airbag goes off. Right? Even I, the simplest creature, the talk show host, understand that's not how insurance works. So now, all of Washington waits for the Congressional Budget Office to analyze the bill so we can argue before it all gets voted before the 4th of July, so senators can enjoy the fireworks from their yachts with a sense of accomplishment. Again, this isn't even a fight over ideology. It's a fight over 1040As. All right, let's get local. Let's roll up the regional sleeve. What happened in Springfield today? The leaders from both chambers were supposed to meet, and the meeting got canceled. Who's canceling meetings with like 8 days to go? And according to Senate President John Cullerton, it was Rauner, the governor, who told the Republicans in the respective caucuses to cancel. What? Sparking another round of criticism that the governor doesn't want to compromise. The Dems are really picking up on this Rauner doesn't compromise storyline. They're trying to paint him as that one guy in your fantasy baseball league that just won't trade. You know, you try to throw in a guy here and there, but he just won't budge. He overvalues his guys. He undervalues yours. Even when you say, hey, come on, I'll give you Ben Zobrist. How about an injured Ryan Braun? Come on! Give me Corey Kluber! Come on, I want Kluber! Wait, what are we talking about again? All right. There'll be a couple committee meetings over the weekend, but when we get to Monday, 5 days left for this special session. Okay. Mayor of Chicago. Let's talk about the mayor. The mayor dodged questions about whether or not he supports the idea of closing the Ohio underpass to the lakefront trail. There was a shooting over by there, and now they want to close it at night. And I guess they got to get the mayor's permission. What the what, huh? Why are we talking about this right now? That walkway should be closed, and the mayor shouldn't have to comment on it. He shouldn't even know about it. Whatever happened to the overzealous streets and sand guy who just does it? Sorry, it's closed. Deal with it. That's the Chicago I love, right? You know, go to a press conference. Mayor, what do you think about the overpass on 800 North? Huh? Say what? What else? They found an Asian carp 7 miles closer to the lake than it should be in the Illinois River. That's not good. Maybe it got lost? The NRDC says that the fish, the Asian carp, they're like cockroaches. If you see one, there are many more close by. So don't leave dirty dishes or old food on the Illinois River sink and or counters. We cool? Is that all we have to do? A little Windex out on the banks of the river? A new study says that driving while high could lead to more accidents. Now, why is this story not at the top of the old Google feed, huh? Who funded this study? Of course it does, right? Of course driving while high leads to more accidents. Even people who drive while they're high know that. Please tell me this study took 2 hours to complete and the scientists were paid in Subway gift cards. No federal dollars, please. It's ridiculous. Well, I wonder if you would get intoxicated, if there's a chance you could get in an accident. I say put that on a grant. Let's see if we can get $4.5 million from... Trump's right. Cut it all. Cut it all. If this is what's coming out of the National Institute of Health. Yeah. This is a good tech story. Facebook is trying to crack down on scammers in India who are stealing women's profile pictures to do nefarious things like catfish Americans. It's gotten so bad that Indian women don't even put up profile pics anymore. What? Facebook is like, that is unacceptable. We're the only ones that should be making money off your profile pics. Feel-good story of the week. Grizzly bears are no longer endangered. Yep, they've been protected, and it worked. And that means open season. Get those automatic machine guns out. Just throw a couple salmon in the old town dump, and you'll be able to eat a little grizzled grizzly for like a month. It's going to take a week and a half to be like, ah, we might have screwed that up. They're endangered again. Hmm. In weather, beautiful day, right? Sunshine. Supposed to be night this, is it supposed to be night this weekend? I don't know. I don't trust my iPhone anymore. It's been wrong for like the last 3 weeks straight. I'm going to be in the marching in the gay pride parade, and Pete Zimmerman is as well. We'll talk about that. Talk about this 1 year anniversary since Pete took the wrong Uber to Cicero. Talk about that coming up. In sports, what a day for sports, huh? The NHL draft is underway. The Hawks have the 26th pick, and what a week it's been for that squad. First, they lose Trevor Van Riemsdyk. Then Marian Hossa retired. I'm sorry, has eczema. Then Nicholas Jarmelson gets traded. The Breadman or Temi Panarin shipped out. But that's maybe not a bad thing because the guy he replaced is coming back. Brandon Saad back in the building. Nice move. Hate to lose our Temi, but Saad is better than bread. Am I right? Right? Guy should have been like, grass is better than bread. Yeah. The Bulls blew it up all last night. They traded Jimmy Butler to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Butler and the 16th pick for Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and the 7th pick, which they turned into Larry Markkanen. Not enough guys named Larry in Chicago. Butler thanked the fans on Instagram today, but he also took parting shots at the Bulls brass. Pretty standard. Just the way it goes now. So right now it feels like the Bulls are a Donyell Marshall away from 2003, right? A banner time in Bulls history. Most fans and media see this as a lopsided win for the Timberwolves and that the Bulls didn't get enough for Jimmy Butler. I agree. If it were me, I would have gotten all their picks, Andrew Wiggins, and the rights to Tom Gugliotta. Great basketball reference. Back in a simpler time when a guy like Tom Gugliotta could be on a basketball team. So for those counting the Bears and the Bulls, draft days were considered the worst in their respective sports. Way to go. And like I said earlier, add that to the White Sox, and 3 of the 5 major Chicago sports teams are in rebuilding mode. Great. In baseball news, the Cubs won big last night to start their road trip. They're back in Miami tonight. Hey, maybe the demotion of Schwarber is the right thing to do based on this very small one-game sample size. The minute that the Cubs lose, we're going to be like, eh, you know, bad move. Schwarber needs to come back up. Don't look now, but last night's shellacking of the Twins moved the Sox out of last place. Woo! Still 7 back, but now the Tigers are 7.5 back. The Oakland Athletics are at the G-spot for the weekend. They are having a tough season as well. And maybe because they play on the West Coast, but I haven't followed them. You know, I used to know all of the A's, and who are the big players on the Oakland A's this year? Is Jason Giambi's brother still there? What about the Bash brothers? Are they still playing? But Carney Lansford? Is Dave Stewart still pitching to Terry Steinbach? The weird helmet. Eric Plunk. And that's your Oakland A's. That's your 80s Oakland A's. And finally tonight, the Han Solo movie fired off the directors, and now Ron Howard has stepped up to save the franchise. That's right. That was just what I was hoping for. A Star Wars movie that had action like The Da Vinci Code, thrills like Ransom, and hilarity like The Dilemma. I'm just waiting for Tom Hanks to replace Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian, because you know that's going to happen. You know they're going to be like, he's just a better Lando. That's the carryout for June 23rd, 2017. Hey, you like napkins? Good, because we gave you like 700 with your order. We don't know how messy you are. All right, coming up, Carm's going to join us to talk a little sports. We got a lot to talk about tonight. Boy, oh boy. Blackhawks. Lots of movement. Team's going to look entirely different. That's coming up after the news. 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
How cool is it going to be here to this year to hear Gene Honda, the PA announcer for the Blackhawks, announcing a Brandon Saad goal?
I know, right?
Blackhawks goal scored by number 20, Brandon Saad.
We talked about this. I mean, I'm a casual hockey fan. I've gotten more into it now that I'm at WGN, and it's a part of our DNA here.
Sure.
But, I mean, Brandon Saad was the real deal, especially when it counted. Brandon Saad was making plays in the playoffs. I liked Artemi Panarin. He's fast and a young kid. But the one thing that in the 2 years, it was like, where did he go when it became crunch time in the playoffs? So I'm okay with that move.
Yeah, Panarin's a nifty player. Not many people in the NHL can do with the puck what he can.
Yeah, right.
But Saad's a big body. He's going to give you 20 to 25 goals a season. And like you said, he's going to get those greasy goals when it counts in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what you need. Yeah. You need that Dustin Byfuglien.
Well, you know, let's be honest. Look, the Blackhawks will be the first to admit they got smacked around a little bit in the first round sweep at the hands of the Predators. So they need some size back. Mm. They really do.
Well, I'm excited to see what they do here. I'm hoping that they're already to the 15th pick. And the best part about watching the draft in the corner of my eye is the names of the players that are still left. They throw them up there, and they're like, right now it's Juuso Välimäki, Christian Vesalainen, Timothy Liljegren with four L's. There's a lot of good names on the board right now. So
Nick Suzuki.
That's a good one.
From Owen Sound in the OHL.
There you go. So I hope that we get, I hope whoever we pick's got a colorful name. That's all we really need at this point.
Jimmy Butler, he is a wonderful athlete. Jimmy Butler, nicest guy in the whole wide world. He's so good at shooting threes. Oh, yeah. You give the ball to Jimmy Butler and he's gonna shoot it and it will probably go in. He is a
really guard. Lyrical genius on that one, man. It's just amazing music that you found there, Zim. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. A huge week for Chicago sports, not just the wins and losses in that category, but I mean, really some movement in really all facets of the major sports franchises in this town. Most notably, though, tonight the Chicago Blackhawks are on the clock. They have the 26th pick. They've got 17. They're only at the 17. They still have 9 to go till they pick at the 26. The Bulls last night, superstar Jimmy Butler shipped to Minnesota. The Cubs demote Kyle Schwarber. Lots going on, so we thought we'd bring in Mark Carman. He's on the line right now. Carm, wow, this is one for the, when they say that the summer starts to slow down, this is a week for the ages.
It really is. Justin, thanks for having me. You can start wherever you want. I think it's obviously the Hawks and Bulls are in different spots here, but I think there is a little bit of similarity in sadness, comma, joy for both on what they've done.
Yeah, let's start with the Blackhawks since, you know, they're waiting right now, and of course they're hoping to get something tonight as they've got the 26th pick. But a flurry of trades and some well-known names that we've come to love. The word that kind of circulated is painful to see these guys go, and some return guys. But talk about these moves tonight because, you know, management said they wanted to shake it up, and this is pretty much a shakeup.
Right. Well, I mean, Stan Bowman, again, proving to be a man of his word, right? You go out in the first round, you get swept, and he was not satisfied. Obviously, no one was, and changes was coming. No one saw this, though. I mean, the bread man leaving town, I mean, Nicholas Hjalmarsson, you get a little bit younger, you get a little bit more physical with your defense, okay. But trading Panarin, who, I mean, him and Patrick Kane, everybody knows their relationship was incredibly strong on the ice. No one saw that coming, and along with that, obviously, no one saw Brandon Saad coming back to the Blackhawks. But I think it's super interesting because Saad can pair with Jonathan Toews. Hopefully you get him back to the level that he's accustomed to playing, and, you know, he's obviously extremely motivated, as he always is. So and it's a huge salary deal, right? Yeah. I mean, they're getting more years of control, and they still have their, you know, prime time.
I think we lost Carm there, or maybe he's still on the line, but it sounds like we might have dropped him there. But that's a good point. We didn't even think about the idea of salary. That's the one area that it's funny because Brandon Saad, he has to go after the Hawks win the cup, and we kind of see all of these players that really contributed to years have to go. If you're not part of the core, the Hawks are going to have to deal because they're getting so close to the salary cap. You know, so you can understand, like, you know, the pain that we had to go through to lose a Brandon Saad. But it's interesting to see how the Hawks can maneuver to get him back. I mean, it's tremendous. I mean, Artemi Panarin, like we said with Rob, we were just talking. I mean, I don't know. The concept of that kid was really, really good on the ice. And we really had a rookie of the year. Loved it. I mean, amazing, amazing player for the Blackhawks. But in the last 2 years in the playoffs, when they needed someone to step up that wasn't Patrick Kane, that wasn't Jonathan Toews, we didn't see it from Artemi Panarin. And Brandon Saad, I mean, say what you will, they're different types of players, but Brandon Saad did a tremendous job of making an impact in the playoffs, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that was what was most important. So the Hawks bring in a familiar face, and, you know, what we'll talk when we get Carm back on about Marian Hossa and the loss of Marian Hossa and what that means. I believe that we've got him back on the line. Carm, you there, buddy? You still there?
Justin, you there?
Yep, sorry.
Yeah, I apologize.
No worries.
Hopefully that won't happen again.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, a ton of moves. I mean, obviously, we were just talking about it. You know, bringing Brandon Saad back, but the loss of Marian Hossa, with still questions about whether Marcus Kruger's going to be here. Trevor Van Riemsdyk gone in the expansion draft. I mean, what from what you could see, the pluses and the minuses, where are we with this squad? I mean, what kind of team do we have on the roster?
Well, okay, let's look at what's happened here, right? You have a 109-point team that everyone thought was going to make a cup run, and it just didn't happen in the worst scenario possible. However, Nashville ends up going to the Stanley Cup Finals, easily could have won, was right there. So to me, that's a little bit of, you know, softens the blow. You know, the other side is that you're looking long term and you're looking short term. And to me, I mean, you're Saad for Panarin, that to me is I don't know, upgrade, same, equal, right there. Marian Hossa, love him, phenomenal career, Hall of Famer, incredible, the whole thing. But the reality is that he's, you know, getting up there in age. And he had a great year last year. But, you know, he wasn't the year prior. It was a down season, and the Hawks were incredibly, incredibly competitive. So I don't look at this team as anything but a Stanley Cup contender. I still think they're very much in the mix. You still got Crow, you still got Kane, you still got Toews, and you put your trust in Stan. I think that listen, Brandon Saad's been, you know, great for Columbus, and they've been having seasons they've never had there. Yeah. So I think the Hawks are very much in the mix.
All right, let's transition to the Bulls. Last night, a shocker, and once again, and I mean, we had this problem with the, oh boy, with the Bears, but the Bulls as well, where the league has spoken, the critics, the media, and pretty much fans alike have kind of pointed this out to say that the Timberwolves got the better of the deal. Do you see it that way, that the Chicago Bulls could have got more for Jimmy Butler?
I actually don't. Look, you know, they tried to get the third pick from the Celtics. Boston wouldn't do it. They tried to get the fourth pick from the Suns. Boston wouldn't do it. So, or, you know, Phoenix wouldn't do it. So, listen, I'm sure they were calling everybody under the sun. And the fact of the matter is Jimmy's great. I love Jimmy Butler, tremendous competitor. But, you know, you're talking about 2 years of control, and then you're talking about a $200 million contract. And teams weren't going to give up, you know, 5 years on a rookie deal for the top guys in the draft, especially in a year where the draft's very strong.
Yeah.
So you got a super young, talented backcourt now in Dunn and LaVine. They could, by the way, if they had picked Zach LaVine when they took Doug McDermott, that would have been a good move. Obviously, they didn't do that. But I like Zach LaVine. Now he's coming off an ACL tear. That's terrifying, and everybody makes everyone think of Derrick Rose. But I don't know how much more they were going to get. I mean, I really don't. And I as much as I love Jimmy and will miss Jimmy, I do appreciate the Bulls picked Delane. And, you know, okay, you bring Jimmy back with Wade and Rondo. We're dreaming about a run to the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Now, I would enjoy that because I like going to the games and covering a somewhat relevant team. But if I'm the organization, I'm trying to win. I think what they did makes sense.
Yeah. What kind of team, I mean, do you see with the team being younger and the sort of, I mean, even think about the last couple of play. I mean, Taj Gibson's gone, McDermott's gone. Who knows from this, you know, they have five point guards right now. They're going to have to get rid of some of those guys. Are we seeing also a molding of a roster in the way that Fred Hoiberg wants to play? Younger, faster, shooters, things like that.
See, now that one's where I do start to get a little physically ill. Because, I mean, Justin, you know, like, what has Fred Hoiberg ever done where you would even remotely consider building a roster around, like, the quote-unquote skills of Fred Hoiberg? I just find that to be so incredibly ridiculous. Like, if you're a good coach, you take the talent that is on your team and you make the most out of it. Now, you know, this is a ridiculous thing to say because Pat Riley's Pat Riley and Fred Hoiberg's Fred Hoiberg. But Pat Riley coached the Lakers. They ran up and down the court, and they won championships. Then he went to New York, and they had a bruising Knicks team, and he coached that team. You know, it shouldn't be, well, we got to get players that fit around his style. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Let alone a guy who's never done anything in the league, you know, coaching. And I like Fred, nice guy and all, but, I mean, come on. But, and the other thing is, you know, okay, you want shooters. Chris Dunn can't shoot. I mean, that's your point guard. Cameron Payne can't play. Rajon Rondo, if they bring him back, he's not a shooter either. So I don't see like this. You know, LaVine can shoot it, and I guess marketing for a big guy can as well. But Fred, I don't think Fred is long for the Bulls after call it next season. I mean, the team's going to struggle. They're going to most likely be in the lottery, and I don't think, how can you extend Fred Hoiberg at that point?
Yeah. You know, as we look at that team and you think about these young guys that are been brought to, what can we expect from them? I mean, we have short memories, but I mean, man, Chicago Bulls fans are still, I mean, we're still hurting from 1998 to 2000 whatever when Derrick Rose came, where there has, you know, we weren't able to do anything. I mean, are we back to those days? I mean, can we trust Gar Forman and John Paxson to usher us quickly to being a relevant playoff contender?
See, I think you can have some optimism with Pax. I mean, he did do the initial rebuild with Ben Gordon and Kirk Heinrich and Nocioni. Throw some names from like the early 2000s where the Bulls got relevant again. And then, of course, they lucked into Derek and they went to a whole nother level and finally made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, to me, that's all about John Paxson. Gar Forman, once he's been the GM, I mean, he's known for one thing and one thing only, really, and that's everyone calls this guy a liar. I mean, it's from Jimmy Butler's trainer to different people that I've, you know, talked to around the organization who are no longer with the organization. It's just very confusing to me that he has the job security that he has. So to have trust in Gar, to me, doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I don't quite get why he has the job he has, to be honest.
All right, let's make one last transition to the Chicago Cubs. Right now, trailing the Miami Marlins in the sixth by a run. But you know, let's talk about this. Kyle Schwarber sent down to the minors. Of course, their depth being challenged right now with Zobrist and Hayward on the DL. You know, Pete and I were kind of talking right at the top of the show about, you know, this idea that Cubs fans are just kind of chilling out because they're like, they'll make a run. But this team has been mediocre at best and has not shown any flashes of being a competitor or contender at this point. Where are the Cubs, especially with the move to demote Kyle Schwarber?
Well, I was waiting for it. I think a lot of people were, right? You can't have the guy with the worst batting average in the league, on your roster, especially when he's a young player who hopefully will gain a lot of confidence going down, find himself, and come back and be productive. I think, you know, Schwarber in the leadoff hole, although he would never admit it, I think it messed up his season. And so maybe a mental break will help him.
Yeah.
I still think, I mean, you know, when it comes to the Cubs right now, and Cubs fans with their confidence, it's because of the division, right? I mean, nobody thinks that the Milwaukee Brewers are going to win the division, and the rest of the division is under 500. So, I mean, they've got the same amount of losses as Milwaukee, and basically nothing's gone their way. I mean, Addison Russell, until recently getting hot, has stunk. Schwarber has been terrible. The pitching, John Lackey's given up another home run tonight, and now the Marlins are up 2-0. So, you know, they haven't. The Kyle Hendricks DL thing, I guess, is the biggest concern. Going into the season, I said that he was the key to the whole thing. because their pitching is thin. Yeah. And, you know, he was so far out over his skis in how he performed last year that if he went south, then I thought you had a problem, because you figure that Lackey's getting older, he's going to regress. Arrieta, I didn't think he would be this bad, although he pitched well in his last game. But, you know, I figured he'd stay around where he was last year, and Lester would have a downtick, but you needed Hendricks, and right now you just don't have him. So I think it's a team that can get in the playoffs, but I don't think it's a team that can do anything in the playoffs. Yeah.
Well, I kind of lied at the top where I'm like, well, all we have updates on all five. The White Sox got nothing going on. Mark Carman, at the Carm on Twitter. Thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin. See you, man.
All right, thank you, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time to reload this week's news. 312-981-7200 is the number to text, to call, to play along tonight. We've got the biggest story, winners, losers, overreported, underreported. Which story sucked you down the rabbit hole, and which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from now when they reverse it, when it's we go back to cave drawings, you know, and they draw on the cave. The story of this week. That's what that'll be part of the folklore. That's how I see
it. And hieroglyphics.
That's how I see it happening. In studio tonight to help us through, to help us reload this week, Amy Guth. Amy Guth, of course, here at WGN Radio. She does the business lunch on Saturday and also the Saturday Night Special, which is at 7 o'clock. Also, Dave McKinney. Dave, great to see you. Dave, the political, government, and finance reporter at Reuters, former Bureau Chief in Springfield, Chicago Sun-Times. Good to see you, Dave.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's get into this. Amy, why don't you start us off? I think we all agree the biggest story of the week, healthcare.
Oh, I put the wild horses story. No. I also think, did you see the wild horses story?
No.
We are overrun in this country by wild horses. There's this major population problem with wild horses. Isn't that weird?
It is weird.
And
wow.
It was accidentally in a top stories box on the top of a website as all the healthcare stuff was falling out. And I was like, would somebody needs to program the...
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, healthcare. And with anything in our modern time, it's so interesting to have the back channel communication happening and watching social media as something is unfolding. And it's very interesting because you get an exhausting number of hot takes sound identical, but everyone thinks they're quite unique.
It's really hard to figure out up versus down and heads and tails.
It is.
About
it
what's
is.
Even in the bill because of all the stuff that's coming at you.
Well, and there was a secrecy with it, too. I mean, they kept this thing under wraps, and you know, even Senate Republicans were clueless about what was in it.
Yeah, and late Wednesday night when leaks started to happen, suddenly there was just swirls of speculation. Some of it was a little bit inaccurate. So there was immediately Wednesday night, it seemed like Team A was going, okay, this is what we know so far. Team B is going, the world's on fire. Yeah. Like, it's all. Ah!
I forget which senator it was that I saw the line about, you know, we haven't seen it yet, but the lobbyists have, you know, and it's just like so typical government.
Yeah. I mean, when you see that and when the historian, the Senate historian comes out and says it's never been done this way, this is the first time in history we'll have this closed door session without debate and all the things that go along with that. Is this an improvement or is this, you know, are we sort of seeing the erosion of the American democracy? Because we saw, I mean, this country is so divided right now that if you put it out there and you did committees and things, who knows what would happen? I mean, is this efficient government or are we in a territory we don't want to be in?
You know what? I mean, the rubber meets the road when those votes have to go up on a board. I mean, people have to take votes and that's it. You know, I mean, these things get created in a vacuum. I saw it all the time in Springfield. You see it in Washington. But you know, I think that's what's really interesting about this Senate health care bill. They're putting it out there when they don't appear to have the votes. And, I mean, they seem to be way underwater in terms of the
votes.
Why
do they do that? I mean, I'm fascinated. I mean, because we saw even in the first health care bill that came out of the House, they pulled it off because they didn't want to be embarrassed by not having the votes. Why does the Senate push so hard right now when there is uncertainty around if they have the votes to get it through?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that they, you know, there was a perception, and even the president himself called the House version mean, mm-hmm. and you know, there was a feeling that the senators were going to come in and they were going to do it right. And I don't think anybody really is sold yet that this is anywhere close to soup. And so, you know, it'll be a big defeat if they don't get this thing off the ground. I mean, there's a vast Republican constituency out there that is, like, you know, pounding at the door, get this done.
Yeah, right.
And if the Republicans don't do that, they're coming up against a midterm election here, and if, you know, God forbid for them, if they lose the House, then suddenly, you know, this golden opportunity that the Republican Party has had in controlling Congress and the presidency is out the window.
Amy, Dave said it. I mean, the president, in a strange way, said it was too mean, the House, and when he talked to the senators. The Democrats seem to have seized upon that because every leader that's come, including our Senator Dick Durbin, you know, has to use that word and say mean and heartless and all this in the interpretation of what we've seen so far. I mean, when the emotions come out and we talk about words like mean and words like heartless, I mean, it's interesting to me to see the politics around all of these phrases.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you feel about it. It matters what it is and how it lands and what we do. And I think that really applies to anything with, you know, business, politics, anything. It doesn't matter. Even, you know, we can even tackle procrastination that way, right? It doesn't matter how I feel about this task. At the end of the day, I've got to go sweep this floor or do this thing, right? But I think, to me, it's another example of just really poor communication and rollouts from this that we're seeing in this administration. We saw it right off the bat with the executive order around travel, that even you know, TSA agents called upon to enforce it were going, wait, what are, I'm sorry.
what are we doing here?
What, right. I don't know how I'm supposed to act. And so to me, it's just, it's this more of the, you know, the word fatigue keeps getting thrown around at this time because that's really what's happening. I think everyone's just getting so worn out about, oh gosh, another mishandled communication, another mishandled thing. But, you know, and so in those times when things are so badly, when the communication is so badly managed, people do attach to words that are highly emotional and supposed to have this very emotional appeal and not an, you know, a factual or just plain rational one. People grab onto those emotional words and act accordingly. And I think they can be quite manipulative when we want them to be. Certainly, I'm sure every politician's been accused of manipulation.
Yeah,
and in their campaign times. So, I mean, it's just an interesting kind of social experiment, really, right now. Unfortunately, it's at the, you know, a very high cost.
Well, it's fascinating to me that you hear all about the, what, 1/6 of the economy, healthcare is involved. Like, there's a lot that goes into this. It's a strange place to be to have it behind closed doors. When I think about this health bill, though, this is what voters voted for. I mean, the Republican Party ran on a repeal of Obamacare. And that's been something, I mean, you cannot deny that was the platform for Donald Trump and the Republicans who were up for re-election. So there is, I mean, they have to do something. But a lot of people, and I thought it was really interesting, Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Rand Paul, both sort of saying it doesn't go far enough, or it doesn't even address the issues that we ran on, meaning premiums are too high, or we shouldn't have federalized health care. So in a strange way, it seems like we're seeing a party have to do something because they ran on it, but not really addressing the problems that the people want to be addressed.
Well, and it also exposes the fault lines within the Republican Party when, you know, the conservatives want to do all this stuff, and then, well, wait a minute, the moderates in the party are saying, wait a minute, we can't do that. And so it's just like all the pieces not fitting together in the puzzle. And, you know, really, voters look at this in very simplistic terms. They want health care to be less expensive, and they want it to be of high quality. Those are the two basic principles everybody wants. But yet, you know, with when we're talking about doing something as complex as this, you're talking about a monstrous bill. And you know, I got a kick out of the House when this went through, when the House version was being debated and it came out. There was one of the cable news channels was asking these congressmen just randomly, "Have you read the bill? Have you read the bill?" And they're like, "No, I haven't read the bill." And that's inevitably what happens here too. And it's so complex. These rank and file legislators, A, don't have the time to read it, and then I don't know if they have the ability to comprehend what's
in it. And the expectation too. I mean, they're almost by order not part of the system. I mean, you do what the leaders tell you to do. I mean, we see that in Springfield. It seems just to be the way it is.
Yeah.
We're reloading this week's news. Healthcare, of course, the biggest story. We got winners, losers, overreported, underreported, and we want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Dave McKinney, Amy Guth in studio. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. Amy Guth and Dave McKinney in studio are reloading this week's news. Let's get to winners and losers. Why don't we go there? Winners is always tough because you're like, who's winning off the news? But this week, I mean, the most obvious happened in an election. And it was a big win for not only the person who was running in the election, but for Donald Trump.
Well, yeah, we saw that in North Suburban Atlanta. It's Newt Gingrich's old congressional district. And enormous sums of money went into this district. I think the Democratic candidate who was leading in the polls for a while, $30 million to spend on a congressional race, which is unheard of, unprecedented. And, you know, in the end, the race wasn't even that close. It wound up being like a 4 or 5 or 6% difference. And so the Republican Karen Handel comes out with a pretty easy win. It gives the Republicans, you know, pretty much a clean sweep thus far out of these special elections.
Yeah, Trump told us on Twitter.
Yeah, he let us know how
five
how
and
it all
oh
went.
The Democrats yeah. oh zero yeah. losers. We got all that.
Yeah. That's right. You know, and then the Democrats were turning on themselves the day after. I mean, you know,
which
Nancy
they
Pelosi.
Should. You know, because I have to say that what gets me about it is it's a referendum on Trump until they lose. Then they're like, it's just no.
Yeah, it was
just,
an unwinnable.
We couldn't have won there. And you're like, they like to say in the lead up that this is, we're going to see the Democrats take. We shouldn't even be in this race and we're here. And then they lose. Like, it's just a local race.
Yeah, but you know what? They've got to win 23 seats right now. They're held by Republicans, most of them in the suburbs. This is a really good kind of laboratory for them to trot out things. And you know, look, the Democrats still struggle with their messaging and they mm-hmm. struggled with lots of things, but there's still a lot of races to be had, but this was clearly a moral victory for Donald Trump.
It really is, and what does it mean for the Democratic Party? Amy, I mean, this is a party that's been led by a DNC that's somewhat unpopular in its own party. Nancy Pelosi's sort of getting the heat on this one for losing this. What does it mean? I mean, is it time for the Democratic Party if they're going to gas up for a 2018 midterm? So they have to think about what their message is and who their leaders are.
How long do you have until the news break? I think it's an awakening, it seems anyway, to the Dems that there's really more involved, more needed, more required, and I think it seems to be a party that falls quickly and easily to it's going to be fine. Oh, it's way ahead. It's fine. It's going to be okay. You know, and instead of one of great action. And I think there's lessons to be learned that I'm shocked weren't learned better in the last presidential election. But nonetheless.
But, you know, here's the deal with that. I think it's a trap right now for Democrats.
Yeah.
They want to run so badly against Donald Trump. I mean, they can, you know, these the tweets, the you know, all the mistruth, you know, misstatements and untruths. But yet they can't run against him. That can't be it only. They've got to have, you know, the sales pitch. Why us? You know, and they have not. That's the part they're suffering on. They mm-hmm. haven't delivered on that. They can't just run against Trump.
I was going to say, I mean, and we'll talk about this as well in the reload, but it reminds me a lot of what's happening here in Illinois, that, you know, there's a gubernatorial race that's starting up, and it seems, once again, the Democratic Party they're just foregoing a primary, and they want to give it all to J.B. Pritzker, and it seems like you said, Amy, not a lot of lessons learned from what we just saw in 2016, where they are picking the candidate before the message, before the voters, everything about it, and once again, seems to be a playbook that there were cracks in the foundation.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, I think, you know, the one thing that is good for Democrats right now is they still have time. You know, in most of these states, the filing is sometime in December. And so there's time to iron out the problems that exist right now. But you know, Nancy Pelosi, who I think is gonna weather this as she's weathered other scandals and problems and such, she if she does not win those 23 seats, I guarantee you she's out. But it's they don't have an economic message yet. That's what Donald Trump won on. And until they can figure out what exactly it is that they're going to do to help, you know, workers and people who don't have work, they're going to be in trouble.
If I can, because I want to get to yours as well, Amy, but I want to piggyback because my winner is in the same form of why I think Governor Rauner and the Republicans ultimately, and I think it's still up in the air, but have the leg up when it comes to the negotiations here in Springfield, is they have crafted a message that a message that is an anti-Chicago message. And they've puppeted that to downstate, to the middle of the state, to the western part of the state, that it's Chicago and the bail. I use the word bailout. And we have heard over and over about the big, bad Chicago public school system and the big, bad mayor and the graft and the Chicago machine. But it seems to be sticking in the way that lawmakers down in Springfield, they don't feel like they need to compromise or give any extra money to Rahm Emanuel and the Democrats in Chicago.
That's true. I mean, I think, you know, the Republicans, through Bruce Rauner, they are Rauner is up on the air early with advertising that we have never seen before in Illinois. He is he's doing everything he can to sort of present himself as the anti-Madigan. And you know, he does have a message. I mean, I think, you know, we kind of know what he wants. He says it at every opportunity. These, you know, I want workers' compensation right. reform. I want term limits. And these things poll really well. And the Democrats, the challenge for them is, okay, it's fine to be against this guy, but you've got to come
right.
to the table
with
message, something.
Right?
You've got to come to terms and give something. And I think, you know, in the next week in Springfield, it's going to be really interesting to watch what the Democrats do. I mean, I think that they are under an obligation to put some sort of spending plan together and put it up for a vote. I mean, it may not pass. It may be put up, you know, with the express purpose that it fails. That happens all the time down there, so they can blame the Republicans. But they've got to have a plan to put up on the board. If they leave Springfield without that, you know, yeah. guess what? We know what the next commercial is.
Amy, I have to say, I mean, there was yesterday was the pre-slating for Cook County Democrats, and a lot of the gubernatorial candidates spoke in front of the Cook County Democratic Party, including Amaya Paywar, mm-hmm. who said, you know, ultimately that message, that anti-Chicago message, is rooted in racism. That the idea that, you know, you're making Chicago the big bag boogeyman. Mm-hmm. The idea that there are poor people here and there are people, minorities and others that, you know, they're the ones sucking the money away from you downstate. They're the ones that are doing this. And it's not a new message. It's a message that's been done by a lot of downstate politicians. But what do you think about that? I mean, when you see that kind of anti-Chicago, is it, I mean, when you know, Alderman Pawar says that's code.
Oh, I absolutely think it's code. I totally think it's code. I mean, I think there's two main big issues that we're dealing with here. I think there's code for some major systemic issues that are happening here around sexism and racism and classism and all of those isms that we talk about a lot. But also we have, as you touched on earlier, we have people running for spite. And a spite run is, as you said, you have to bring something to the table. And when you don't come to the table with something of substance, it's very easy to fall into old tropes, and it's very easy to kind of toe a line or even just kind of let your own personal socialization show a bit, I think. And that's what I feel like we're seeing so much of right now, not just in this race, but I was going to say nationally, internationally, perhaps even too.
Yeah, right, right. You also have for winners a really interesting story out of Virginia, which, I mean, it's a winner, but it's a murder, and it's possibly a murder, but the idea being that this is a story that is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I struggled to put it in that category of winner because I you know, this poor child, this 17-year-old Muslim young woman, she was attacked, she was beaten, she was ultimately killed, and you know, lots of conversation has erupted as a result. There's been a lot of conversation around whether or not it should be considered a hate crime. Right now, it's being called road rage, and you know, I know it's very complicated for something to rise to the classification of hate crime if you're in law enforcement. But nonetheless, I think that really horrified a lot of people.
And it was the way it was done, too.
It was the way it was done.
You know, there was almost a way to rule out it being a hate crime early. You know, the police in Fairfax were like, this is road rage. Almost
yeah,
in,
it was
like they were
really
afraid
quickly.
Of, they didn't want to go
yeah,
there. So they're like,
yeah,
no, it's road rage. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And it really, you saw a real pushback on Twitter, social media that was like, what are you talking about?
Well, and I think it layers upon, you know, a couple of years ago where we saw some young Muslims who were killed in North Carolina and it was, oh, it was a parking incident. No, it wasn't a parking incident. Clearly this had to do with some xenophobia and racism. So I think it's layering on top of that and just kind of the weight of that on people to realize that, you know, this feels so unjust. I think there was really, you know, a significant pushback on that. And then there was a memorial for her that was put together in DuPont Circle in D.C., and it was set on fire. And so immediately people, you know, start saying, okay, if you're not going to investigate her death as a hate crime, can at least the memorial of burning, we at least say that is a hate crime?
I think there's so much more to talk about. I mean, if you read that news story and you get the particulars, it's very descriptive.
It's very unsettling.
It's very unsettling. Amy Guth, Dave McKinney in studio. We'll come back. We'll do the losers, and we'll also do overreported and underreported. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. All right, we're reloading this week's news. As we just said, the Chicago Blackhawks moved down from 26 to 29, picked up a third-round pick as well, so we'll pay attention to that. The St. Louis Blues are on the clock with the 27th pick. We'll keep you updated on who the Hawks pick at 29. In studio with me tonight, Dave McKinney. He's a political, government, and finance reporter at Reuters. Amy Guth, the host here at WGN Radio. She does the business lunch on the weekend on Saturday and also the Saturday night special at 7 o'clock. All right, we've done biggest and we've done winners. Let's get to losers, and I think the big loser for all of us is what's happening in Springfield, the special session, everything that has transpired in the last just day. I mean, today, Dave, you know, Mike Madigan coming out, talking to the press, saying, yeah, we were supposed to have a meeting this morning. It got canceled. John Cullerton saying, oh, the Republicans were in, but Governor Rauner told them not to go. We're back to meeting strife. I mean, this is where we're at. This is a recycled storyline.
Yeah, it just speaks to how messed up and dysfunctional the place is, that they could spend an entire day licking their wounds because somebody pulled out of a meeting. And, you know, that's not the problem there. The problem is nobody's willing to compromise in any way. Nobody's willing to give a little bit. The election in 2018 is all that matters right now, and so, yeah, stalemate. That's all we are. But four legislative leaders in a room. What might happen? You know, I mean, it's the last time it happened was December 6th,
and
you know, so here we are.
Come on, I mean, it's amazing to think about the deadlines that have been missed. The fact that they're not communicating, they've already gone into campaign mode across the board, both parties. I mean, this dysfunction is not, that's like a tepid word at this point. We're seeing something that, I mean, I guess you go back to ancient times, maybe think of like a Caesar moment. I feel like we get to like Rome is burning kind of stuff. I'm not sure what's happening here. Amy, what's your take on what's happening in Springfield and the fact that there's hopes and aspirations that we're going to have a budget by the end of next week?
Well, I don't think we will. I don't think we will at all. I think what's happening in Springfield is this kind of microcosm of what's happening everywhere else, that there's a lot of people digging in their heels, a lot of people that don't want to compromise. I mean, to me, this speaks to kind of a bigger cultural moment we're in, that conversation is very polarizing and very polarized. And it seems like not only is critical thinking not happening, but it's almost discouraged. You know, if you say one thing, just even as a fact, you know, this side did this and this side did this, somehow that gets interpreted as you have chosen a side, you are a sympathizer to this other group. And it really stalls meaningful progress in a lot of ways. And I think that's really disturbing, because at some point that's all going to implode. And I think it's going to start, we're going to see the implosions first on the local level, and they'll only get bigger from there. But I don't have high hopes about the budget.
Let me ask you, Dave, you've been down there for years. I mean, you covered it for Sun Times for a long time. There was a question asked, this is in Rich Miller's blog today, it was a downstate interview of Bruce Rauner. And they asked, why do you think that Mike Madigan can't work with you? He's worked with Governor Edgar. He's worked with Governor Thompson and other Democrats, of course. What is it? Why can't he work with you? And Rauner kind of stumbled a little bit. He's like, I don't have the answer to that. And you just wonder, like, what is, I mean, let's just talk about those two personalities. I mean, Madigan has picked fights with his own party. He's picked fights with Republicans in the past, but there seems to be a game of high stakes politics happening. And at the end, something gets done. In this case, it feels like they decided they don't want to play.
Well, I mean, you have two exceptionally stubborn people. I mean, Madigan has never taken orders from anybody. And you would have to go back to the days when he was a law clerk in Richard J. Daley's City Hall, probably the last time he was taking orders from anybody. And in Rauner, you know, a guy coming out of the private equity world, he's the one that's telling people what to do and opening companies and closing companies, and so they just get it. They both have in their mind, they're not taking orders from anybody. So here we are. I mean, I think what has to happen from Rauner's perspective, we all know what these you know, what he calls the I forget the phrase he's using now. It was the turnaround agenda, but these things like term limits and workers' compensation and a property tax freeze. You know, what he needs to come to the table with is a good, clear outline. These will save X amount of dollars. These will turn our economy around.
Right.
And be persuasive in his argument. None of that's happening. And so if you're a Democrat, you're looking at that, and it's like, well, why should we give you those? We are in a massive hole here. We have $15 billion
in paid bills. The Democrats will say, and the pundits as well, that the goalpost move, the turnaround agenda items that they will say, okay, we're going to compromise on, they're never enough. And then they also talk about this idea that it's the governor's job to set the budget priorities, and the governor has gone out of his way to not do that, to sort of change the way that government works, or at least the politics works in Springfield, and they're not having it. I mean, are they right in that regard?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they are right to a certain extent. But on the flip side, what you see happening with the Democrats, they're, you know, what little give they're willing to give him.
Right.
They're wanting to dictate what these reforms look like only on their terms. I mean, this workers' compensation thing, for example. You know, they're wanting to create some kind of, you know, state-run insurance company that would you know, deal with, you know, cases of injured workers. Well, that's not what Rauner's asking for. You know, he's asking for something much different than that.
Right.
And there's just no give.
I was going to say that to me is also, as you talk about the flip side, where this whole thing breaks down and gets disingenuous, because you'll see Speaker Madigan talking to the press like he did today, saying he asked for this, we gave him this. He asked for this, we gave him this.
Well, and
no,
property
he doesn't,
tax
though.
Freeze.
But yeah, that's a great example.
Four years versus 2 years, and you know, does it have to coincide with it? I mean, there are just so many moving parts
right
here that we're never going to get this thing brought together under this current regime.
Absolutely, right, and it does feel to me that I can understand the frustration of Republican lawmakers in the sense that, you know, there will be things that will say, this is what we want. And the Democrats say, here it is. And then when you read it, they're like, this is not what we asked for. It's not even close. This gets pulled off. And then it looks like, you know, no one's compromising.
I mean, there's some really
pragmatic
Republicans down there and some really pragmatic Democrats. But this is just, you know, Madigan and Rauner. And that's the problem right now. These two men are the ones that have us in this situation.
All right. Let's keep going. Losers. What else do you have, Amy, for losers?
I'm going to say, well, I was tempted to say the new Ken dolls, but there's like they launched these new Ken dolls like to because there's like more diverse Barbies now, which I think
right
still kind of misses the mark and makes it about beauty, not their careers, whatever. But the new diverse Ken dolls, like, that's a good thought. I don't think it goes far enough. And one of them has a man bun, which I could do without.
Yeah,
but
right. Classic.
Right. So I was tempted to kind of go on softball on that one. But in fact, I think there is something that the big loser here is, in fact, the women of North Carolina, because there's a 1979 law. This case went to the North Carolina Supreme Court, and it basically states that a woman cannot withdraw consent once sex begins.
That's in the law.
That is how it is worded, and it's particularly about women, which I think is interesting. It's not a person, it is about a woman. And so this has come up recently. There's a bill, it's Senate Bill 553, that would criminalize the failure to stop if consent is withdrawn at any point. And this has come up because there is this lawmaker, his name is Jeff Jackson, he's a Democratic state senator, and women have been approaching him individually and privately, like, can you not do something about this? And around and connected to Fort Bragg, this came up in a very, very big way. There was a particularly violent incident that occurred. A woman was videotaped without her consent. She was beaten. The encounter turned very violent. And when she tried to stop it, not only was her property destroyed and she was videotaped, and it became this very upsetting, you know, obviously this very upsetting thing to her. And so she's part of this. And it, like, all these women have come forward talking about all these particularly incidents that turned extremely violent. Yeah. Like, it was a consensual act that suddenly was like, whoa, too far. This is not. But even if it doesn't turn violent, you know, to say wait, stop is to say wait, stop. So it's being held up, though. It's at the Senate Rules Committee's kind of held it up and picking it apart a little bit. And it's really interesting to see people digging their heels in on this particular law, because it seems so obvious. Of course you would want to amend that.
Dave, as someone who's covered state politics for a long time, how many of these sort of archaic laws are still on the books when you think back to like 60s and 70s that if they wanted to be interpreted or challenged, they could be?
Oh, well, I mean, a lot of states had anti-sodomy laws and this kind of thing. And, you know, I mean, what it kind of boils down to is like, you know, if you're a male legislator, you've got, you know, you've got a daughter, you've got a girlfriend or a wife. And the bottom line is like, you know, you don't want them to be treated this way, you know, and that's the part that is the disconnect here on the part of the folks who are dug in and not wanting to, you know, to see this thing change, because it's clearly an archaic law that's rooted probably in Victorian, you know, tradition, and it's way outdated.
Yeah, of property, you know.
Let's what I want to do, and we're going to take a break here, but before we do that, I want to go to the Chicago Blackhawks are on the clock with the 29th pick. We still have overreported, underreported stories, the stories that sucked us down the rabbit hole, and which story will be remembered. As we pay attention right now, the Chicago Blackhawks, they have the 29th pick. So the idea being that the 26th pick, that's what they had, but they traded down to get the 29th and to pick up the 70th pick overall. You know, as we wait for this, you know, the other loser I had on the, which mine was just about sports, the Chicago Bulls, of course, in the rebuild. And I don't put the Blackhawks in the loser category, but what a stunning day when it comes to remaking a team. I mean, trades going here, there, wherever. I mean, the Blackhawks promised after they got swept out of the first round that they were going to make a change. And they're true to their word in the way that you have seen a huge shakeup. I mean, it's surprising for a sports team to be that much, right?
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, the Hawks, the Bulls, both of these teams are blowing themselves up. Yeah.
The Chicago Blackhawks.
All right, here we go. They got to do that. I think now they do the. They're on the clock. For
so they
minutes.
Got the warm up.
There we go. So they. It's at the United Center, which is fun because it's all Blackhawks fans. So there's part of me that wants to stay right here, and we're going to because it's going to be fun when a kid gets picked to play at the Chicago Blackhawks in front of Chicago Blackhawks fans at the United Center. Pretty great to get the NHL draft here. You know, do you think about the. The success that the city has had in bringing the NHL draft, the NFL draft, to be a player in the national stage, that seems like that seems to be a place they want to be.
No, clearly. And the city opens the arms to all the tourists that come in to see this thing. And it is good for the city.
Yeah. You know, we mentioned the sports. I had, you know, for loser, the point I made at the beginning of the show was that three of the five major sports franchises in Chicago are now under rebuild.
Oh,
and that's,
know.
You know, when you say
so sad. I was looking up statistics earlier on the Bulls' last big rebuild that stretched over 6 years. And, you know, that team, they won 119 games over 6 years, less than 20 wins a year. And it's like, boy, that's kind of what I think we have looking forward with that team.
I know, and you mentioned in the email, you know, the draft of LaMarcus Aldridge, only to trade him for Tyrus Thomas, Marcus Teague. I remember Tony Snell. There's so many great names that aren't with the Bulls anymore that scare you off to the concept of a rebuild, because you're like, yeah, we drafted a lot of young guys who came through, and we stackpiled a lot of picks, and those guys just aren't with the Bulls and didn't factor in at all.
Well, and it's got to do with that team having the same, you know, ownership structure and management structure. There's no accountability at that level when these things go south. And, you know, teams that are successful do have accountability, just like we do in our workplaces and every place else.
Dave McKinney, Amy Guth in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Stan Bowman and company getting up to the podium now as the Chicago Blackhawks are on the clock for the 29th pick. The pick is in. And they're about to tell us who is going to be the newest Chicago Blackhawk in the first round. They also picked up the 70th pick. They made a trade to trade down. And now they are all up on stage, and they are ready to announce the first round pick for the Chicago Blackhawks. They're all deciding who's actually going to do it. It's fun to watch them up there. The fans are cheering at the United Center because it's, of course, a hometown undertaking. And let's see what we got here. That's great. They're playing the song as they get ready to do the pick.
That's right.
They got to do a 3-minute song before they actually do the pick. Oh, too good. All right. Here we go. Stan Bowman.
Welcome, everybody. I'd like to start by giving a big thank you to the great fans here in Chicago. You guys came out and made this an incredible night, so really appreciate your support through the years. With our first pick in the 2017 draft, the Blackhawks are proud to select. You know, I think there's a better way to do this. Back in 2006 and 2007, the Blackhawks drafted two players that changed the course of our franchise. I think it's only appropriate that we have those guys come up and make the selection. In 2006, with the third pick in the draft, the Blackhawks selected your captain, number 19, Jonathan Toews. The next year, in 2007, the first pick overall, Blackhawks selected number 88, Patrick Kane.
What's up, Chicago?
I tell you what, it's good to be back in the Madhouse on Madison. You got the best fans in the league. Thanks for coming out, making this a special night for all these young players. Obviously, this brings back a lot of great memories for the two of us. And we're happy to be here again to announce a big pick and the future of our hockey team. Kaner, you want to do the honors?
Just remember, I went two spots higher than Johnny, so. With the 29th pick, the Chicago Blackhawks select Henry Jokiharju.
What a cool moment. What a way to end.
There you go. Henry Jokiharju. I've got that wrong, of course. He is a from Finland, and he is the 29th pick overall for the Blackhawks. What a name. Jokiharju.
That'll fit on the back of a jersey.
Yeah, it's perfect for the Blackhawks.
Give it time. It's going to just like roll off the tongue eventually.
I will say this, you know, I will give credit to the Chicago Blackhawks organization, Stan Bowman, having some fun, some drama to bring Toews and Kaner up on stage to entertain the Chicago fans at the United Center. I'm not sure if anyone's watching the broadcast or the team that's up next. The Predators are on the clock next. I'm sure they enjoyed the fact that the draft essentially stalled out
right,
so we could do our little game.
Yeah,
but
right.
The Blackhawks, a defenseman who is from, like I say, he's a Finnish defenseman. So hopefully we will hear from
him. So I'm going to say the Jay's going to be silent. Yeah. He's a Finn.
There you go.
Let's start with that.
There we go. All right, Dave McKinney, Amy Guth in studio. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. Maybe we'll get Sammy or someone on the line. We can talk a little bit about what he means to the Blackhawks as we know them now. I don't even know who's on the roster after this week. But we will continue here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me tonight. Dave McKinney, he's the political government and finance reporter for Reuters. Amy Guth, WGN host here. She does the business lunch tomorrow, 12 noon, as well as the Saturday night special that starts at 7. We are breaking down this week's news, 312-981-7200. Let's do overreported and underreported. Dave, I'll start with you. Overreported, White House press.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're all champions of press freedoms here. I mean, we'll all admit that, right?
Yeah.
But you know, the White House is playing games now with especially the networks, and has shut down video coverage of Sean Spicer's press conferences, and it's driving, you know, these networks nuts. And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, they're letting audio go through, and they're letting questions be asked. But, you know, in the end, this doesn't hurt anybody except the White House, you know. And if there's a story that goes out that the White House doesn't like, and they've been shutting down the access
that,
here.
Isn't that what the problem. White House spokesperson is for? I mean, we're not dumb. I mean, the idea is that a bad story comes out and they go, no, everything is
we're
gonna
fine. We're going to set the record straight,
yeah, right.
And all that. But
so they lose a little bit of that. Yeah.
Just part of the whole trend of self-inflicted
wounds.
But
the other
right?
thought, too, is that anyone who, you know, the networks that have to show us Sean Spicer press conferences, and that's the bulk of their news, all right, you know what? If they're going to shut that down, that's probably good for all of us. We don't need to be seeing a press conference that's essentially just filled with non-truths all the time, right?
And we forget that the person taking the podium there for a White House press briefing is by definition there to present the best possible version of things. That's not stemming the flow of information. That's stemming the flow of spin, if anything.
Yeah, spin
right?
control, right.
So,
right.
And some of the major things that have emerged from the White House have been as a result of diligent investigative reporting, not because of Spicer walking out and saying something. They've been because journalists are doing their jobs well.
Spicer's exacerbated. If you think of the famous, like the White House or the inauguration crowds and things like that, where it just seems like
he's given Melissa McCarthy tons
yeah.
of
oh my
material.
Gosh.
To work
right,
with,
maybe
right?
that's what it's all
the
about.
The moving yeah. podium is yeah. the funniest thing.
Amy, what do you have for overreported?
Overreported. I'm going to go with the consternation around Jared Kushner's voice. Right. I mean, when I saw that happening, I thought, oh boy, it's going to be real. Like I was expecting Professor Frink from The Simpsons, this super nerdy, and I was like, it's not that weird. It's yeah. not. It's not that.
And
bad.
I was surprised. I guess when I saw that story, I'm like, we haven't heard from him. Like it didn't really bother me.
It didn't even occur to me. I don't feel like I need to hear your voice.
Yeah, I don't know why that was such a big deal. But again, it seems like that everything is being mass produced for clicks, hoping that that'll become something that's viral and Jared Kushner can save an online news organization. All right, I have the Ohio ramp under not ramp the Ohio underpass, which is right here in Streeterville, which is Alderman Riley. Called out that he wanted it shut down because there was a shooting. Someone lost their life over here, 25-year-old woman. But there's an overpass or an underpass at Lakeshore Drive that goes to the beaches, and it used to shut down. And for whatever reason, it's now open, and that is keeping more flow of traffic from the beach to Streeterville, and it's causing problems. I get it. Understand that. The idea of putting that on the front page of the newspaper that says downtown danger. That's what one of the newspapers did, and talk about, you know, crime, and it's all around the idea of shutting down the Ohio underpass. That's been shut down before, and there's still find ways to have trouble downtown, whether it's flash mobs breaking store windows or shirtless teens running up and down Michigan Avenue I think it was 2 years ago where there was this idea of six or seven people were just running around downtown beating people up. I mean, it seems to me there's no doubt a problem, but to say that downtown danger and have it all about an underpass that is in Streeterville.
I mean, that's putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot.
Yeah,
you know,
I hate that. It really felt like the newspaper was a little bit going for something there. All right, let's go to underreported. Some good stuff. Dave, you got underreported, which really goes back to healthcare.
Yeah, you know, we talked about the healthcare bill in Congress right now in the Senate. And, you know, a big part of that is cutting spending on Medicaid. And that's an important thing because we have the Cook County Hospital. We have Mount Sinai Hospital. We have mm-hmm. hospitals that have a high concentration of Medicaid patients in Illinois, not to mention nursing homes. Nursing homes have a high concentration of Medicaid recipients. And so you would think it would be in the state's interest to be engaged
to
have a voice right. in all of this. And yet nobody seems to have a clear answer from Governor Rauner. And that ranks as a good underreported story.
Yeah, Lynn Sweet had a great piece on that. I mean, it was this concept that this is a point for him to be a leader for the state of Illinois. Everything that's going bad downstate, I mean, he could step up and say that doesn't work for the state. He could work on influencing Washington. He could be a governor of a big state in the union, but instead, nothing.
Let's see some engagement here. This is something that matters to the state of Illinois, and it doesn't just affect poor people.
Yeah. All right, Amy, you've got something. That, I mean, one of the bigger stories of the week, the trial and the acquittal of the police officer in Minnesota for second-degree manslaughter. And your underreported story is about the jury.
Yeah, in particular, it's around the jury, the Philando Castile jury. So the Minneapolis Star Tribune compiled all of this data around around the jurors, and for the stated goal of assembling a juror of your peers, it really doesn't seem so. It doesn't seem to be the case. There's some of whom express very specific, feelings about police officers or allegiance with police officers. Some of them worked in the same place that Philando, he was married to someone that worked in the same place where Philando Castile worked. It was like lots of things that you would think would disqualify a juror for sure. But by and large, it was, Salon wrote a little bit in greater depth about what Minneapolis Star Tribune pulled together. And the headline on their story says the Philando Castile jury was stacked with pro-gun, pro-cop, middle-aged white people. That's generalization for the sake of a succinct headline, but it's not necessarily inaccurate. I mean, that was the majority of that jury. And as it's broken down, they were scrubbing Facebook pages of jurors and looking for posts in which they're saying things that are very pro-gun or very pro-cop and very, even racist, things like that. And it's unsettling, especially, That verdict, I think, did not surprise anyone, but I think it certainly disappointed a lot of people.
The verdict, of course, at that point, then the release of the tape and a different angle of what we saw.
It's the dash cam video.
We had seen the Facebook Live that was done by the girlfriend, but to see the dash cam video and to think about this idea that, and I think that I've read and heard this a lot this week, just this idea that, we were supposed to have a more clear-cut idea of what was going to happen once we had body cameras. And if these dash cams were turned on, that's protection for everybody. And now you've got these cell phones that you can put Facebook on, and now there will be no gray area. We know. That was a big argument for all of the videotape surveillance of, and that all happened in this case, and we saw it from all different angles. And again, a situation in which a police officer was acquitted, where I think in the court of public opinion, everyone goes, there has to be some wrongdoing for firing a gun into a car like we saw on the video. Now, I'm not saying, there's a lot that goes into that, but I also read this piece. It was really, really fascinating about the defense of a police officer when they say, I feared for my life. And the emotional and psychological reaction that a juror has, regardless of skin color or, and it's just a mental thing for human beings, where when you can, say that I feared for my life, there's empathy for that. And that's something that you see more often where police officers say, I had fear and I feared for my life. And that comes up over and over as a defense in these cases.
I mean, the jury selection process, I've covered criminal trials in my life. And it's part of the process that we in journalism tend not to pay a great deal of attention to when it's happening. I mean, you care about the opening statements in a trial and the evidence and everything. And
it's a bit monotonous.
It's monotonous. Yeah. And you watch the attorneys, they have three strikes to bar jurors they don't like. And then, off they go. But it's, you almost never see coverage of that. And I think in these police shooting instances, that's an important thing we in the press should be focused on.
Amy Guth, Dave McKinney, we are reloading this week's news. We'll come back. We will talk about the rabbit hole story and also wrap up which story will be remembered from this week in history. It's The Download. Stay with us. All right. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. 630 says the governor has not come to the table not one time to sit and talk about anything. No, I don't know about that. There's another one that's laced with profanities that's about Democrats. We'll let that one go. So I just want to be fair in going back and forth. Dave McKinney and Amy Guth in studio. We're reloading this week's news. We're up to the point about the story this week that sucked you down the rabbit hole. The one that means more than the words that you're reading. The one that kept you in a space longer than you should have because you had deadlines and other things to do. Why don't you start with you, Dave? What do you got for your rabbit hole story this week?
Oh, the president and that confounding Twitter account of his. 41 days. That's more than a month that we're all sitting around wondering where they're tapes of James Comey, and then just sort of like he did when he decided that he believed that Barack Obama was born in the U.S. Never mind.
Yeah,
we get that kind of thing, and it's this
so
pattern.
He essentially comes out and says, "I didn't tape him."
No tapes.
And what kills me about that story, and what was the tweet about? Was he intimidating? Was he threatening?
Yeah, what was your plan, guy?
What was the strategy behind a tweet like that?
Well, that's the whole point of this 140, it's the 140 character defense. It's like, well, I don't have enough space to really you know, spell out in detail what I'm saying, but I think we're all going to have to sort of learn to just, I mean, these tweets are important, but I mean, they what do they mean? They don't mean anything. They mean just the opposite of what he's saying half the time, and that's that. And it's just a big smokescreen.
Yeah.
And so that's what we saw here. I don't know. I think if I were him, I'd be embarrassed. It was a big charade. The whole country was confused. His political friends and enemies were confused. And you know, I even read a report someplace that said he was sort of, you know, laughing about the whole thing when this thing was, you know, does he have tapes or doesn't he? And it's just, you know, that's not in my lifetime.
Yeah.
You know.
It also goes to show you that there is a sort of circus element to it, that he enjoys seeing what comes of his tweets. Like, he likes mm-hmm. watching how people interpret it and whatever, and he gets a kick out of it. And I think that's sort of what we're seeing. But it did waste a lot of time. And in a way, and you think about it, I mean, it really could have inspired or motivated James Comey to tell his story in a situation he may not have done otherwise.
Well, certainly. He took his story to the law professor, who then took it to the New York Times because of that.
So all of this trouble because of 140.
And Trump gets to call him a leaker because of that.
All right, Amy, what do you got? I love yours. What's yours?
Okay, so mine is this really interesting story. There's a group in Colorado called Parents Against Underage Smartphones, PAWS. And what they're doing is they've gathered all these signatures, and they're under this push to regulate phone ownership and create a separate internet for young users. And what a fascinating thing. It's really ruffled a lot of feathers across the state of Colorado, because there's a lot of groups saying, you don't get to tell me how to raise my kids. In fact, it's very important that my kid texts me when this is soccer's out or whatever. You know, you don't get to decide that for me. That's for me to decide.
Right.
They're even proposing that in point of sales, that there would be some kind of data that sellers would turn over saying, I saw proper identification and this won't be.
So almost like liquor or cigarettes,
things
like that.
Yeah, yeah. So that it won't be used by someone under 13 is the age that he's saying. He believes he's kind of saving children's minds. And sure, there's plenty of data out there about the effects of every little ding on our phone is indeed a hit of dopamine potentially. And we are, you know, rewiring a bit neurologically, but that's a separate issue. He wants to make this separate internet. And to that, that's just so preposterous to me, because at no point when you section off a group of people, do you solve the problem. I mean, let's look at it like a quarantine. If you quarantine the people who are ill, you still have to go eradicate the disease. You can't just put people in a room and say it's going away. At no point has sectioning off groups of people done anything positive. In fact, usually it does something quite harmful.
I mean, the hard part about it is that the emotional part of this is that you're dealing with children in the way that people will a lot of times they'll circle the wagons and say, free speech, all that other stuff doesn't matter because I want my 9-year-old to be safe. And you get to the internet is a great example of my son. He gets on the iPad. He starts going through YouTube clips. And I have, you know, I wake up at night at 3 o'clock in the morning going, you know, I haven't paid attention to what he's been doing in the last, you know, 2 days, 3 days. I don't know what he's doing right now. He could be, you know, ordering things online, you know, for nefarious reasons and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there is something to that idea that, you know, if my 9-year-old was presented with a safe internet that was just for them, I'd be okay with it, even though it goes against everything that I would stand for.
But then it also, you have to define what that means. I mean, there could be a lot to that of what's appropriate for
a
9-year-old. Who's
in
charge of that? What if there's something like political or religious that doesn't align with your beliefs, or even like about how sexuality or intellectual, you know, power is, you know, all of those things.
What's age appropriate, right?
That's for you to decide as a parent.
Absolutely.
So this guy that's created this organization, he's leading the charge on a proposed ballot initiative that it would even potentially punish parents who buy a smartphone with the intention of giving it to a child under 13 years of age. So I don't think it will go very far, but it's a really interesting story to watch. And it really took me down the rabbit
hole. You get to iPads and you get to other, you know, tablets. And I mean, I don't know where that road goes, because technology, I was just at dinner tonight that was right around the corner with my family. And next door was a family of 3-year-olds or 4-year-olds at the booth. And they got their, probably looking at mom's phone or whatever it is, but they're looking at the phone. And you get to a certain point where you're like, I don't know how you regulate that.
Yeah, the genie's out of the bottle. I mean, you just have to sort of, you know, it's a parenting thing.
Right.
You've just got to teach your kids to be safe. I mean, you're the ones ultimately in charge of it.
Yeah. All right, here we go. This is the big topic. This is the one we've all been waiting for. Which story will be remembered
in 500 years?
5, wow. 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week. Oh, boy. This is a tough one, right? This is the...
This was kind of a forgettable week in some
ways.
Yeah,
it really was. You know, I guess you could take a stab at the biggest stories, but what do you have? What do you guys think would be the story that's going to be remembered from this week? Amy, you want to start it off?
I'm going to say definitely healthcare. There's just the conversation around it. It's been huge, but in particular, the part I think that will always be pinned to this week is the image of a grassroots disability rights organizer being taken out of her wheelchair and pulled away.
Yeah, not a good image.
Shouting for,
DC,
for
right.
Medicaid.
Right. Yeah. For Mitch McConnell and company. No. Dave, what do you got for a story that's going to be remembered?
You know what? It's Monday was the deadline for bids to come into the Sun-Times, my alma mater. And, we saw the emergence of a group led by a former Chicago alderman, Edwin Eisendrath, and including some unions, and we don't know if they're going to be getting this. It looks like it's up against Trunk versus them, but it's very important that Chicago be a two newspaper town, and in terms of will this week, be remembered in 5 years, if they're the owners, maybe it will.
Yeah, there you go. Mine will be very specific. Zach LaVine, he will be the kid who they came in the Timberwolves trade, will become the next Michael Jordan. And in 500 years, they'll be like, there was once LeBron James. There once was Kobe Bryant. There once was this guy, Michael Jordan. But everybody remembers Zach LaVine.
If he has a working knee.
Why you got a harsh eye? Why am I harsh on my buzz there, Dave? Dave McKinney, the political, government, and finance reporter for Reuters. Amy Guth, WGN host, who's got the Business Lunch tomorrow and the Saturday Night Special. And the documentary, we just didn't even mention, but which you're working on. I know it's a
so topic that just keeps on going. It's about online harassment. And so I've been really focusing on adding political layers to it because there are a lot of lawmakers, particularly down ballot, that are trying to combat that. But it's been an interesting time to be on that topic, just given the political landscape right now.
Amy, Dave, thanks so much for reloading this week's news. 219 says maybe there are tapes, but there are no benefit to release them. That's true. It's pronounced a J like a Y. Talking about the new defenseman, the Finnish defenseman.
Yoki Haru,
that's what you say?
Yoki Haru.
Henry Yoki Haru. Sounds Japanese.
It does. Yeah. It does. But the way it's spelled, Henry, H-E-N-R-I. So up in Quebec, when he plays against the Canadians, it'll be Henri.
All right.
Yoki Haru.
Yeah, right. when they announced him, I'm like, this would be awesome. The first Japanese hockey player to come play in Chicago in the first round. I'm sure there's been others. But that would have been, that's what I thought was coming.
You mean he wasn't on your mock draft board?
He wasn't. I had him in the third. So it's a stretch. Yeah. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Tracy Swartz from the Ink Column in the Chicago Tribune. Reality check, what happened on our favorite reality shows and how it pertains to Chicago. Thank you, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock hour tonight, the frying pan. It's back. Steve Gadlin will give us his latest invention, and we'll poke holes in it, give him some constructive criticism. I have a good feeling about this one. I do. I have a good feeling. I think this is going to be the one. He joins us monthly here. He's had a couple rough months, but I have a good feeling about tonight. And I know you're going to help out, 312-981-7200. You know, I had pledged, one of the pledges that I had made to myself, I like to do that at the beginning of the week, is that I'm going to watch The Bachelorette. And that was the thing. And I didn't do it. I let myself down. I'm very depressed about it, Tracy. I'm very depressed that I did not go forward with my pledge to myself to catch up on The Bachelorette. But that's why I have you. Tracy Swartz is the Ink columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And, of course, they're regular here on the download with the segment Reality Check. Tracy, good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So this week was not a good week for Chicago. Let's talk about The Bachelorette and get to the bottom of not only who's gone, but who's left.
Right. So this week, Monday's episode, we started off with a rose ceremony, which was not good for one of our Chicago contestants. Pretty unceremoniously, Rachel sent home Diggy, the Groupon senior analyst.
No, that was my guy, Diggy. Or wait, was it Iggy? Wait, was Iggy or Ziggy? Darn. I feel bad for him.
Well, she definitely sent home Diggy, and they just didn't connect. They didn't spend any time together, and he cried after she did not give him a rose, which was uncomfortable, at least for me. So he went home early in the episode, and then they had she had a one-on-one date with another guy, but she had a group date, which was a Bachelor Nation spelling bee.
Okay.
A bunch of the contestants had to go up and spell different things. Your guy, Iggy.
Iggy, yeah. Iggy's still in it.
Yeah, they did multiple rounds of the spelling bee. He went out on the second round for misspelling boudoir.
Okay.
He spelled it like Bordeaux the wine.
Okay.
So he was out pretty quickly.
Easy mistake to make for my boy, for Iggy.
Easy mistake. Anthony, the other Chicago guy, he works in schools technology. He went to Northwestern. He made it to the top three, but could not spell the word boutonniere. So he did not win the challenge.
Okay.
This guy named Josiah, he's an attorney from Florida, won the challenge. And he spent most of the episode bragging. They gave him like a gold cup for the spelling bee win. He was like drinking his booze out of a cup, and he was basically strutting around. So this did not please Iggy, and so he used his one-on-one time with Rachel to rag on Josiah. Now, this is like the second week he's done that. He did a very un-Chicago thing. He snitched.
Oh, no.
Other guys, and so it was very awkward.
Oh, Chicago's not looking good in this week. This is not a good week for Chicago.
Not looking good. So he snitched and then sort of went back and told Josiah and the other guys that he snitched on Josiah. So they proceeded to call him a couple names that I won't use on your family program.
Thank you.
They called him a gossip queen, the lamest student in the house. They made some accusations about his physique and basically just started a verbal altercation how the episode ended.
That's how it ended. So they don't do – so I'm an old school Bachelor, Bachelorette fan where every episode at the end ended with a rose. Now they've switched it up where now they're doing it in the middle and things like that. So dumb.
Yeah, I think so because they've had a problem with spoilers and leaks and stuff. So I think that they sort of disguise the rose ceremony. It sort of like ends in the cliffhanger of – what's going to happen at the rose ceremony, and they show that first. So she'll have another rose ceremony early on in Monday's episode. This week, I don't know why, they're going to do an episode on Monday and Tuesday. So you get double the chance to watch The Bachelorette next week.
So there's a good chance that both of our guys are going to get cut this week.
There is a very good chance because, first of all, on this show, no matter what you say about trying to warn, you know, the star of the show about the contestants, like, nobody likes a tattletale on this show.
Right.
So she has a couple people, they're questionable, still left, but it's up to her to decide through this process whether they should stay or go, not for other contestants to just rag on them.
Well, you know, and we'll get to, so this could be a bad week for Chicago. The other thing, you know, when I pulled up today and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to get up to speed on The Bachelorette, right? So I type in Bachelorette. It took me a couple minutes to spell that right. And then I Googled it and I put it, you know, news, top news. And all it was about a former contestant being racially insensitive on Twitter to the new Bachelorette. And then there even was a big op-ed piece from HuffPo that was like, racism is not entertaining, it's gross, ABC. So there seems to be, I guess it's inevitable because the candidate is the first African-American woman to be on The Bachelorette. But, I mean, is this not the direction they want to go in where reality is facing reality?
It's very awkward, and she even acknowledges it. She sort of breaks the fourth wall on this past episode. Talking about how much weight and pressure she feels being the first African-American Bachelorette One of the contestants on the show, Lee, a white guy, I think he's from the South, he posted some inflammatory racist tweets in his past before he was on this show.
Okay.
That, of course, came to light after the show started airing. You know, she doesn't know this at the time. The guys who run this franchise say, oh, we don't know about it, which is just a breakdown of your background process because
they
were all
out
there.
About it and they're just playing it, but go ahead. Yeah,
exactly. But anyway, the other contestants sort of allude to it during, the show and, but no one really comes out to say that to her. So she has kept this guy Lee on, and she will go on this two-on-one date with him next week. And one of her black contestants who has been vocal against this guy who has, you know, made the racist tweet. So that's playing it up for, you know, the cameras. Here we are going on a two-on-one date with two very contestants who are very toxic together. So did she keep them around because she really liked them, or did she keep them around because producers nudged her and said, keep this guy around?
You know, you explain it in a great way. The reality of it makes me go, nah, pass. Like, just automatically, ooh, a double date with a toxic, possibly past racially insensitive tweet at 10. You know, all right. Let me ask you before I let you go, The Bachelor in Paradise, we talked about this show, was really in hot water last week. Last week we talked about it. I mean, it was raging that they had allegations of sexual misconduct, possibly on film. They sent everybody home. There was just so much drama about it. It kind of went quiet this week, but The Bachelor in Paradise is returning to filming. Talk about it.
Yeah, I feel so – I'm coming back to you, the listeners, with my hat in my hands. I had blocked off my whole summer that this was going to be not back on the schedule.
Yeah, right.
So, but basically what they did is they did their own investigation. They did an investigation of themselves and found that no misconduct happened. And so they invited a bunch of the contestants back. They had previously released a cast list that was people who were not on the season of The Bachelor, except for this guy, DeMario, who was part of this sexual misconduct allegation. So now they have not said which, if anybody from that original cast, a lot of cast members have kind of outed themselves and saying that they're coming back. Now, I will tell you that Diggy was spotted at the airport the first time around going to.
Oh, right.
Mexico.
Yeah, you told us that. Right. So he will be back. He'll be back. Hopefully.
Who knows if he'll be back? That's the big question. I haven't seen anything on his social media to indicate that he was heading back, but he was on that first round. But he couldn't be outright with it because he had not yet been kicked off
right.
of The Bachelor.
But now he's free and clear. He's been kicked off.
Right. He can probably say it. I just don't know what the rules are. ABC, I've contacted them this week. They're feels like they're on lockdown beyond the statements that they're putting out. But yes, it appears that there will be a Bachelor in Paradise. I am expecting at least a couple of the Chicago people, either on this season or in past seasons of iterations of the show, to appear, which means I am back to being on the couch watching for you this summer.
All right. That's good for all of us. That's good for Download Nation for sure. Tracy Swartz, the columnist for the Inc. column in the Chicago Tribune, and she is our regular with the segment Reality Check. We check out the reality shows and the Chicago connections. Tracy, always great to talk to you. Thanks for updating me. I don't have to watch next week.
It's twice, so you better watch. You have no excuses now.
Man. It's a download here on 720 WGN and it's a beautiful night here in the city of Chicago and the region in which we live. So exciting. It always blows my mind that we're jamming out right now as the airwaves, the sound waves, they just travel at the speed of light across the great Midwest. If you're listening right now in Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Indiana, Kansas even, Colorado, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, and that's all the states I know. So that's going to do it right there.
Now can you do the capitals?
Capitals. I used to be really good at that. I think that was one of the things I had. I just felt like that was, I was so good at it. I don't feel like they teach it enough now. I feel like my son is going to go into fifth grade now. And I'm like, let's do some capitals. And he's like, what's a capital? And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Oh, man.
I mean, I think he knows, but it's not like, I felt like, I don't know when it was, but there was a certain point where I was like, I would go crazy in a very sort of Rain Man way to get all 50 states and the capitals down. And I was super into it. History was a big thing for me.
A couple of years ago, I was at in Vegas, and I was at a dinner with some people, and actually got into an argument about the capitals. I challenged somebody. I might have had a couple of cocktails in me, but I challenged them to name the capitals, and you know, insisting that I could name them all. And that, you know, the person was like, you know, what about, you know, North Dakota? And I was like, I totally forgot. But that was one of those things where I used to be like an expert at, but now I'd be lucky to get 30 probably.
Yeah, that would be good. It might be a good segment to try and get people in studio to do that, but with no electronics, no Google, no clues, no lifeline.
There was an episode of Friends where they did a game where in 5 minutes, name every single state, or, you know, write them down, single state in the union. So we've done that in the past, and it's rare where anybody can get all 50.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On Friends, Joey had 54, which was the joke, but, yeah, that's a fun game. That's, if you want to spice up a family party,
that's the one to do.
Get out your yellow notepads.
I was just playing a game that I believe comes from my wife's family. It was a match game, but it is superheroes, and it's a DC Comics match game. So essentially an old 70s-type board where they would have these little pieces of plastic where one side was white, and you would be able to flip it over like it's almost on a hinge. You flip it over, and it's a picture of the Riddler.
And then there are
50 pieces across a red board, and then you flip them back, you know, so you just Riddler over here, then you try it over here. But it's like all the classics. It's like right out of, it's probably the 50s. It's so good.
I wonder how much that goes for in the swap meet.
Yeah, right. I should check that out. It's missing two. That's the only thing where I'm like, so the good condition rule.
They're missing the same guy?
I think so. I think maybe it was missing three.
And so they're off. You're off. Yeah, bit, yeah. Yeah.
But it's so fun. It was just like, where did I see Supergirl? Like, it was that. It's like,
Your memory still sharp as a tack?
No, my 9-year-old beat me three times straight. But it was like, where did I see Luthor? Lex Luthor. It'd be like Mixelplick. Oh, where was that little guy at? It's so fun though, man. I played it probably six times in the last 2 days.
They probably all look somewhat similar. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, if you're not familiar with, I mean, you know, Superman, obviously, or is it Superman?
Superman. Batman, Joker, that kind of stuff. I will say this, is there anything better than the joy of a total guess and getting it right? If you play the match game and you flip the bottom and let's say it's, Hawkman. And it's early in the game, and you're like,
that's a real one.
I think it's a Hawk Girl, too. Hawkman. And you go, all right. And then you just go, I'll flip one in the third over to the left, and you hit it. Is there anything better than that in any sport, any gaming? The guess? All right.
That's got to feel pretty good. What about a Yahtzee, though? I mean, a Yahtzee's a pretty good one.
A Yahtzee's a pretty good one. But a guess of any kind, and I don't just mean in this game, but when you're like, a card game or anything, we're like, let's just do that. Oh, yeah, you got it.
When you hit me up with a science and nature question in Trivial Pursuit, You just randomly say Einstein
like,
or something.
I don't know. Organism, animal kingdom. Yes, you got it.
Amoeba.
Amoeba. Oh. Oh, there's nothing better. All right. Coming up, the frying pan, Steve Gadlin. He is ready for you. He's got a new idea. I think this is going to be a good one. I have a good feeling. 312-981-7200, the frying pan on tonight. Steve Gadlin in the house.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot, frying pan hot.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Gadlin is the brain behind the successful local business I Want to Draw a Cat for You. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. Yeah. He's giving us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence to pitch it to Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Thank you, sir. It's so good to be back, Justin.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice. Of course, it's been about a month since we talked to you last time. Time you were on, you're not, I wouldn't say, you know, fully rejected, but you were partially rejected and dejected both at the same time.
Well, yeah, it's always a challenge, but you know, I think this month I've got something, again, I see it as a win-win. I don't see how anyone can pick this one apart.
Wow.
It's like a pretty solid invention that anyone in the right mind would want to install right away.
I mean, that's high praise for your idea from yourself. That's pretty good.
Yeah, what you're hearing is my optimism, and that's something that entrepreneurs, that really helps them out, is that sort of optimism, you know, and good feelings about their ideas.
All right, Steve Gadlin, why don't we get right to it? What's this week's idea for the frying pan?
So, Justin, you tell me, what's the worst thing about a car? Well, I'll tell you, actually. It's those car alarms. Were you ever sitting in a restaurant or sitting at work and you hear one of those car alarms go off?
Mm-hmm.
That's just that loud, obnoxious noise that bothers everyone around. Well, I tell you, we've already solved this problem, Justin, and we've solved it with another device. We all have something we carry in our pockets called a cell phone. And when you don't want to hear that ringer, you put it on vibrate, right?
Right, yeah.
So what I've invented is a car alarm that instead of making those loud and obnoxious noises, has a vibrate mode. So it's more of a calming hum. You know, it's just a vibrating car sound. It resonates against the street or the pavement below it. Without really bothering people around.
Right. Okay. What's the name of it? What are you calling it?
Safety car.
Safety car.
Yeah. So what it does is it helps prevent car theft. If a car thief were to get in your car, safety car, you know, the same way a normal car alarm would, knows that it's not the owner of the car. And instead of making loud, obnoxious noise, it scares the car thief, but also really bothers the people around it, the car will slip into a gentle vibration. Now, what that does is immobilizes the car thief because he's being shaken so violently, and also generates a nice, soothing hum to people outside the car so they know something is going on.
Well, as a city dweller myself, there is no doubt that that's an issue. When a car alarm goes off and it takes a while for it to be shut down, that can be a major, major annoyance.
You know, a good analogy is if you're in a meeting at work and someone's telephone goes off and starts making that obnoxious ringtone. How much more annoying is that than if you're in a meeting and you hear that nice, gentle, soothing vibration against the table? Everybody loves that vibrate sound. That's why they added it to cell phones. So what I'm trying to do is bring that to car safety and car alarms with safety car.
Safety car. All right. I've got questions, but I'd like to defer to the Download Nation. 312-981-7200. What do we think of safety car? We got questions on how it works, how it operates. what its intention is, and so many other questions I have technically, also questions fundamentally.
Sure.
That we'll get to. 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call, get a chance to talk to Steve, ask him questions, and help us poke holes in safety car. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. It's a download. The segment is The Frying Pan. Steve Gadlin in the driver's seat.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot, frying pan hot.
It's The Frying Pan here on the download. 312-981-7200. On the line with me, Steve Gadlin, the entrepreneur, the innovator, the inventor, the man behind iwantodrawacatforyou.com. He, of course, won on the show Shark Tank. He got a development deal with Mark Cuban. And now before he goes to Mark Cuban, with new ideas, he comes here to workshop them with our audience. It's an amazing, amazing exclusive. We really appreciate it, Steve Gadlin. 312-981-7200. Tonight's idea, safety car.
Yeah, safety car is a vibrate mode for a car alarm, basically. What it does when a perpetrator enters your car, instead of broadcasting that loud and annoying obnoxious car alarm sound, the car slips into a vibrate mode. From the perpetrator's point of view, the car will start shaking violently and really immobilize him in that driver's seat.
Uh-huh.
You know, it shakes so violently that the tires on your car are going to pop. But from the outside, what you hear is a nice soothing hum, something like bzzz, bzz, bzz, similar to when a cell phone is left on a table. Again, far more pleasing and less obtrusive to the community than a standard car alarm.
Right. So it does two things. It changes the way that car alarms work, but it also helps rid us of environmental pollution.
Yeah, you know, environmental pollution, that's a great way to put it. Yes, it rids you of that environmental pollution and immobilizes that car thief in a way that will make him think twice, or her, about ever stealing a car again.
Yeah. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's go to 630. The question 630 has is, where is this device attached, and how violently is the vibration to people who are in nearby cars?
Oh, that's a great question. So the device is actually cradled right under the engine. It attaches to the engine, and similar, it's like an enlarged version of the vibration tool in your cell phone, which is basically a tiny little motor that spins around very quickly, but this is, of course, much larger. So it goes right under the engine. That's it. There's no real effect to people who are not in the car. Mm-hmm. For the person in the car, though, this is quite a violent shake. This far surpasses any safety code that a roller coaster might have. And, of course, it shakes so violently, again, the tires will pop from the friction on the road. There might be some neck damage to the perpetrator. But the important piece here is that nice, soothing sound you hear from outside the car. Bzz, bzz, similar to a cell phone being left on a conference room table.
Okay. There's some other questions. What about car alarms that are set off very easily? 630 wants mm-hmm. to know.
Well, this one is not set off as easily, obviously. If it was, that would be a real shame, because then you'd have to replace all four tires on your car when it right. wasn't even – there was not even an attempted theft. So this is triggered using similar technology to a standard car alarm. It knows when a good guy or a bad guy is sitting down in your car. And when it detects a bad guy who's not supposed to be there, well, this thing will go right off.
Right. 773 says, well, it's easier just to this might be a mechanic, and easier to just disable the starter.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what that means. I'm not a car mechanic. What we're trying to do is replace kind of an annoying, obnoxious invention with one that's a lot more soothing to those around.
Yeah, it's gentle. It's an improvement on it, right? That's the idea.
Yeah,
it's an improvement.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're taking a technology and you're making it better.
Yeah, which if you look up the Latin roots for entrepreneur, that's what it's all about.
Right. Okay, well, I'm on the air, so I'm not going to be able to look it up, but someone maybe
okay. yeah.
could if they wanted to. 312-981-7200. 630 wants you to take it a step further, program the owner's phone number into it, and send a text saying that someone's entering the car. Only then it's a winner, and I expect my cut.
Well, I'll tell you, that's actually an idea that I had thought of, and what I was still, you know, I like to lead with some of the basic functionality and then drop in some of the more advanced functionality as we move further into the show. But there is Bluetooth connectivity here, so the owner of the car will definitely get not just a text, but also a very gentle vibration that matches the frequency of the vibration of the car. Oh, okay. So again, real important, a very nice buzz to let everyone know that this car is being broken into.
Maybe 262 has a question. Just did you consult any mechanics before pitching this idea?
Well, you know, I'd say generally we all know how cars work. So no, we haven't talked to any actual auto mechanics. We talked to a lot of alarm specialists. We specialize in some of those old noisy alarms. We actually talked to one of the gentlemen who programmed the original tones for some of the car alarms you hear today.
Oh, okay.
And we talked to, you know, what we think is important is talking to the listeners. And by listeners, I mean other people in areas where car alarms go off frequently. And they all agreed that it would be far more pleasant to hear a buzz, buzz, buzz than some of the obnoxious loud car alarm noises we hear today. Right.
312 wants to know, will this contraption damage the car?
Oh, very much so, yes. So the vibration is so violent. Again, all four tires will generally pop due to the friction on the road. And then you'll have some damage to the rims as it continues to vibrate beyond that. But what we find is important in the surveys that we do is not so much the sanctity of the vehicle, but we want to make sure that the person attempting the theft is immobilized and apprehended.
Right. 708 says, wouldn't the sound of the tires popping be more annoying than any car alarm?
Just well, that's, yeah. You know, that really depends. That's a matter of opinion. And again, the vibration noise is so loud that it's very difficult to hear the popping. We've done hours and hours of testing with this. So, yeah, I'd say the tire popping sound is actually far less noticeable because of the loud vibration sound of those rims on the pavement. The buzz, buzz.
Right. 312-981-7200. Steve Gadlin online. We're doing Frying Pan. This is where Steve Gadlin, of course, the local entrepreneur, comes up with new ideas. And before he pitches them to Mark Cuban, who has a development deal with, he pitches them here. Tonight's idea, safety car. 630 mm-hmm. says, I just lost it here. Hold on. Where is it at? It just got bumped because there's a lot of people coming in. My cars already do that. So does my sump pump, my washer and dryer. They all call my phone. Technology is beyond what you're coming up with here.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. Again, yes, there are plenty of devices that call phone if you're a millionaire and have magical devices, and they each have their own cell phone. But we're not advocating purchasing cell phone for any of your appliances. We are building this vibration tool, you know, for those of us who aren't Johnny Muchbucks, who don't have $1 million to spend on right. several cell phones for our appliances. So,
well,
yeah, sure. The technology exists for a lot of things. I can make my house completely voice activated if I've got the money for it.
Yeah. But I don't think you need several cell phones. I think you need one cell phone and apps that go on the cell phone.
Well, you need your own cell phone, and then each of your appliances would need a cell phone, too, if you expect them to call you. Plus, you've got a program in the AI that teaches them how to dial a phone. So, you know,
a
totally different set of products. Again, this is an improvement on the car alarm. But instead of that loud, obnoxious noise, we get a nice, soothing buzz.
Well, 630's got a question. The old noisy alarm is supposed to be a deterrent from anyone getting in the vehicle. If they're if they are in the vehicle and the alarm doesn't work, and then it also destroys your car, what kind of warranty would you have for the vehicle?
Well, listen, if it's a deterrent, then why do we hear it so much, is what I have to ask. You know, you can't go on any city block without that constant chorus of obnoxious car alarms, which, again, would be much nicer if it was a nice soothing vibration. This alarm behaves a little differently. It lets the perpetrator get in the car, and then it makes them sorry that they did.
Oh, right. 630 seems to be upset, saying, if he thought of the texting first, he would have said it. I still want my cut.
I did think of it first.
Right. but it just seems like he's calling out that it sounds like you didn't.
Well,
it wouldn't be the first time that's called out, but yeah.
That's just their opinion. And, you know, I know what's in my heart, and I know what's what I thought of. So.
Okay, here we go. 815 says he does know that the whole point of an alarm is to alert everybody and anybody.
Well, yeah, you know, but you want to do it in a polite way. You don't want to intrude on someone's day. For instance, if I'm just a bystander, mm-hmm. and I'm not related to the person who owns the car, and I'm not related to the person who's stealing the car, I don't need to know everything that's going on. It's really none of my business. I would be, you know, it's nice that I'll hear a nice soothing bzzz as I walk past, and I'll see a perpetrator violently shaking in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's not critical that everyone in the world knows your car is being stolen. We're not all reality stars. You know, with this day and age, everybody wants to be on TV. Everybody wants to be famous.
Right.
But, you know, some things still need to stay private.
773 says, will you also be making these buzzing noises in the pitch in front of Mark Cuban?
Well, I hope to, yeah. That's I think once he hears the nice, gentle, soothing buzz, buzz, he'll get a real feel for the, you know, how soothing and excellent this product really is.
262 has a safety question. What if the alarm goes off when you're in the car, or more importantly, when your kid's in the car?
Yeah, that's something we don't want to have happen. And I think we use enough technology to make sure that it doesn't. If your kid was in the back seat and the vibration started, definitely would be, there would be some nerve damage, possibly some permanent neck damage. So the goal is only goes off when, you know, again, a perpetrator is stealing your car, not when one of your family members is sitting in the car.
But
it's a good question.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest, it's not one we've thought all the way through, but I don't think that's going to be a deterrent.
All right, well, that sort of concludes. I have more questions, and I think there are some people in here that have other questions, but it almost concludes our question segment in the way that I think we're ready to say yay or nay. If you're listening right now and you know, you got all the answers, it was exactly how a pitch meeting goes, right? You get all the questions out.
Great.
And we're getting closer and closer to just being the investors in the room and giving a thumbs up or a thumbs down to Safety Car, Steve Gadlin's latest on Frying Pan. 312-981-7200. Rob Martyr, Safety Car. I mean, it's not his first auto invention, but what do you think about the idea of changing the sound of the car alarm?
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm giving it two thumbs way up.
That's all right, great.
Well, there you go. So, Rob Martyr.
Well, Rob, I've got one in the mail on its way to you right now. So.
It'll be installed toot sweet.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying Pan Hunt, Frying Pan Hunt.
It's the Frying Pan here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. On the line with us tonight, Steve Gadlin, the local entrepreneur, the innovator, the small businessman. He did I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. And he sold it to, he won on the show Shark Tank. He has a development deal with Mark Cuban before he brings new ideas to Cuban. He brings them here to the download, to WGN Radio. Steve Gadlin, tonight's idea, Safety Car. Explain.
Yeah, so Safety Car is a remedy for those obnoxious car alarms we hear all day and night in our neighborhoods. What it is a vibrate mode so that when a perpetrator breaks into your car and sits in the driver's seat, instead of triggering a loud, noisy alarm and generating some of that noise pollution you were talking about, the car will vibrate violently so that completely immobilizes the perpetrator. But outside the car, instead of that loud noise, we hear a nice, soothing buzz, 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 buzz.
Right. Yeah, let's go. As I mentioned, there's a couple more questions and I want to get to them, but I also offered up for people to give us the yay or nays for tonight's idea. So let's go to the lines. Let's go to Jim. Jim, yay or nay on Safety Car?
Nay. I just want the deterrent. I want the loud, obnoxious noise that attracts attention, which thieves don't want to have. I want to be scared away. I don't want damage to my tires and my car. I don't want to. I want to deter it. I want to be scared away, and that's what that does. I don't care if it's an obnoxious sound. I want
to ask you a question.
Obnoxious and attract people to what's going on, and that'll take scare the perpetrator away, just like a house burglar.
Jim, hold on one second, though. I mean, go ahead, Steve.
Oh, that car alarm noise is so ubiquitous now. I bet if a car thief heard it coming right out of the car he's stealing, he wouldn't even notice it because we hear those noises constantly, whether or not a car is being stolen. So this, you know, it's not so much we can't expect that a car thief would be scared of a loud noise, but they sure would be scared of being shaken violently until their neck snaps.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, we'll agree to disagree.
All right. There are a lot of questions about that. For instance, 815 says, nay, not only would it render my car useless, but I suspect that insurance wouldn't cover the damages. Better to be let it be stolen.
Well, I'm not sure about that. We have not consulted with insurance companies because, frankly, we don't think that's going to be a big issue. Again, we're creating ideas to pitch to investors, not necessarily to customers yet.
Right. So you'd have to figure that part out because
we think everyone's going to want one regardless, and they're not going to wonder about their insurance coverage here. The car will be unusable for a while. You get your rims fixed and you get your tires replaced. But again, would you rather not have a car? Small price to pay, if you ask.
847 says, I work on mobile phones. The vibrator in a phone is a counterweight that rotates. With the weight of a car, the vibrator would be huge. Not only would it be able to shake the one-ton car, or it said it will not be able to shake a one-ton car. Stop saying a nice, soft buzz.
I'm not sure what they're saying there. Again, this is not just a fantasy product. This is something we've tried and tested and actually have in use in four cities, not in the United States, but in countries around the world. So, you know, we have developed a device. When I say similar to a phone vibrating counterweight, I'm just saying that to make it easy to understand for your callers. But, of course, this is a patented device that sure as heck will shake that car, as well as anyone who's unfortunate enough to be sitting inside it.
815 wants to know, if the government sets standards of lighter cars and trucks for better fuel economy, how much will this weigh? And what if somebody's around when the tires blow?
No, that's a good question. If someone's around, frankly, the vibration of the vehicle will probably deter anyone from being around when those tires finally blow. That's not something that happens immediately. It happens after 4 or 5 seconds of violent vibration. As far as the weight, we're really not sure. Again, the purchasing, we haven't worked out pricing quite yet, but you'll be buying a different model per car. So we have one sized for small cars, one sized for large cars. You know, if you accidentally put in the truck model in one of these economy cars, it'll shake that car right up the street. You know, so we have several models for different sized cars.
All right, 312.
You know, $6,000 installed, all the way up to $14,000 installed for some of the larger cars.
Yeah, you just said you hadn't worked out you hadn't worked out price points. So I thought that you hadn't worked out price.
Well, we haven't finalized it. Of course, it's something we need to take to the consumer. We want to make sure the pricing is less expensive than the car that you're protecting, just by a little.
That's smart. Let's go to Joe. Joe, yay or nay on safety car?
Well, I think nay. I just tuned in about 3 minutes ago and just caught the bit about the annoying sound from car alarms. And ironically enough, I was in a parking lot the other day, and I'll be the first to admit, I'm just as annoyed by the obtrusive, loud, blurring sound of a car alarm. But what it does accomplish is I noticed that three other people, in addition to myself, at least looked in the area at the car that was causing the noise.
Right.
We're all annoyed by it, granted. But nevertheless, it causes you to look and pay attention.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for that.
What right do the perpetrator or the owner of that car have to be stealing your attention like that?
Well, I mean, you start to get esoteric at that point, right?
Well, the caller's gone, but I bet I know the answer to this next question is, was that car actually being stolen? I bet the answer is no.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't think that's his point. But 773 wants to know, could this be used on other vehicles like my boat?
Yeah, we're not sure how it would work in a boat. If the boat is in water, that vibration might start causing some very large waves. So, you know, we don't see that boat theft is as prevalent a problem. And when you're out in the ocean or the sea, we're, you know, I'm not sure how that works. It's not an industry I'm familiar with.
Okay. 312-981-7200. 630 says, just because of the wrongful death suits against you, because your car will vibrate the person to death.
Well, I didn't say that it would vibrate the person to death. Now, in some cases, that might happen. But again, you know, this is a deterrent.
Right.
People will not steal cars because they may be afraid of being vibrated to death. Maybe that's a fear.
Right.
That some people have.
630 says the idea should be that the doors lock and that the pictures are taken from multiple angles of the perpetrator in the car and that the alert is sent to the police
again,
that someone's in the process of breaking into the car. The whole vibrating idea and causing nerve and neck damage is going to end up getting this guy sued to the point where he's not going to be able to do business. Bad idea.
Well, okay, I won't even respond to the second part, but that first part with something taking pictures, again, this is, sounds like a millennium part of the selfie society that's all about, you know, taking pictures. And I just think that's ridiculous. That's not a product people actually want. You know, not everyone who owns a car is a self-centered millennium.
All right, 773 says, could your product be used as a potential weapon on another car? I'm going to go with nay.
No, yeah, they're absolutely right. Nay, it cannot be used as a weapon on another car. It's very expensive to install this device, so it's not something you would spend the money to install on as a prank on someone else's car. You'd need, you know, pretty explicit access to that vehicle to get this done. So, no, this is a personal product for your own car.
708 says, no, what about valet parkers?
Well, there probably have to be some sort of code that you have them punch in where they sit down in the car and maybe they have 15 seconds to punch the code in before the alarm is activated.
Right.
And you hand them the 8-digit code when they get in the car. So it shouldn't be a problem.
All right. 312-981-7200. I want to get to, there's a lot of text that just gives sort of a one word answer.
Okay.
Let's
hope it's gay.
Yeah, well, let's see here. I'm going to get down to, I'm still scrolling. All right, so let's see what we got here. 847, nay, nay, no, unworkable, no, expletive, no. How dare you? How dare you?
How dare you?
Yeah.
How dare I, or how dare those people?
No, I think they're You're a joke is on here too.
Okay.
Wouldn't the contraption damage the car? But we got to that. It does, right?
Yes, definitely. It definitely causes fixable damage to the car. But again, not as much damage as not having a car.
It's a no from me. Two thumbs down. Voting nay is an insult to all other nays. That's a good one.
You know, they say two thumbs, but I don't know. We allow two votes per person. Right. So that should just count as one nay.
630 is a nope. 847, stupid idea. 630, another expletive. Is this guy related to Kellyanne Conway? Because he can really spin stuff.
No, I'm not. And the only spinning that's happening is the device as it vibrates the vehicle.
Right. 773's got a question just about what makes you think that the perpetrator will sit in the car seat. He could break a window, open a door, steal items, and run. Then you're left with a damaged car that you got to repair.
Well, this is not geared toward people who are just stealing pieces of the car. This is geared toward the person stealing the car.
Right.
You know, and frankly, that's one of the issues with the existing car alarm. Someone breaks in and steals a stereo. What good does that loud, obnoxious noise do? There's no purpose to it. The contents of the vehicle are already gone. So this is really geared toward people who are going to get in that driver's seat and try to drive away with a car that they don't, that doesn't belong to them.
Right. 773 says big yay for me. So you got
great.
One. That's good. Also that's wants great. To know, can it be remote activated? If yes, then it could be used as a weapon. So I don't know if that's a yay because they're into the idea or if they're trying to weaponize your invention.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, we'll go to great lengths to make sure that if this is not a weapon. It is remote accessible, though, because, of course, there's a
a great Bluetooth connection to your phone.
Okay. And then the last one here is just a criticism that, you know, I let you know this stuff not because I'm trying to put you down, Steve, but because I'm trying my best to make you a better inventor. 630 says this is a solution looking for a problem. And this guy's inability to take any criticism is going to be his downfall. He's smug and he's an arrogant.
Well, you know, did you say he's an arrogant?
Yeah, an arrogant. The article an, yeah.
Yeah, well, that person needs to go back to spelling and grammar school. I believe they're trying to say that I am arrogant, not an arrogant. It's an adjective, not a noun.
Right.
And I'll disagree with them. I think I take, you know, I think they're not understanding the invention, and that's a problem with that specific listener. You know, a lot of times my ideas are highly intellectual. You have to remember, I spend maybe 40 hours on each of these inventions, and your listeners only get to hear about them for, you know, about 1 hour,
right?
Less if you factor in news, weather, traffic, and commercials. So it's, you know, I think that person is jumping to a wrong conclusion.
Well, I do think, Steve, and you know, obviously there are a lot of side effects to this, to the safety car, but the concept of trying to change the way that an alarm would sound, so we get rid of the nuisance, the public nuisance of an alarm going off in your neighborhood, and also what it does to the person who's trying to steal your car by vibrating and making, you know, as you say, making a violent vibration. I don't think it's really a bad idea. I think that we're all on the same page with that. It just might be, like for instance, 414 says 100% yay. 224 says yay. Yes vote from me.
Great.
And then 773 said nay, but how's the progress on the rainbow dirt?
Oh, that's, I'm glad they ask. I'll have to go back over my files on that one and check, but I believe we are, you know, we're still in the lab on that one.
Okay, well.
I'm glad they brought that up. That's really sweet of them.
Well, there are a lot of great inventions that you bring tonight, of course.
Yeah.
I think maybe misunderstood, because I truly, as the host of this program, I truly do understand where you're going with this. There does need to be an upgrade on the technology used when it comes to alarms on cars. They're obnoxious.
Yeah.
They cause more harm than good. Most of the time, they're not at all brought up by someone trying to break into a car, someone bumping into a car, or the wind or something like that. And if there's a way to remove that, you know, that nuisance, and yet at the same time protect your car, I think the issue here is more about the damage that's done to the car, the liability that would happen if you it was too violent in its vibration to the person who's trying to rob, and of course maybe the price point, you know, $6,000 to $14,000.
Well, it's cheaper than the car, cheaper than replacing the car.
Some cars, some, yeah, right. So that's where we're at. So I think, Steve, I think that you've done a tremendous job tonight. I think,
thanks,
you know, devil's in the details. That's the problem here, that getting to the tires getting blown out and the possible, you know, violent shaking and not being able to discern whether it's someone from your family or the crook. Those are things you're going to have to – you probably need to actually massage before you get to air.
Well, don't slip down to the intellectual level of some of your listeners there, Justin. I mean, of course, we have solutions for all those problems, and I don't think most of the ones you mentioned, I don't think are actually issues. I think, you know, people just trying to get on the radio.
Okay, well, Steve Gatlin, the local entrepreneur, innovator, and small businessman, once again joining us in the Frying Pan. We'll catch you next month, Steve, with another invention. We appreciate you being here.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Justin. Take care of yourself.
All right, that's going to do it tonight here on The Download. Very excited. We will be at the Pride Parade.
WCN
Flow. You're going to be there?
Yay! Yay! All
right.
Look at this. This is exciting in studio. Esmeralda and Jana, how are you guys doing? Good to see you.
Doing pretty good. I realize I'm covered in drool. Esmeralda has pointed this out.
when I got here in studio. I wore a sweatshirt that was kind of buried because, you know, it's the first time it's been a little chillier in a while. Right. So I was like, I'll put on
and
a little zip up.
And it's not even like in the just like a pool of it. Right. It's every like splattered. I thought it was paint.
You thought maybe it's like a new style. Like you got like a.
That too. I was like, are you bleaching your jacket?
But
now?
I've realized is it's just blotchy white patches. The last time I wore this was I was at my parents' house and my nephew Archer fell asleep on me and
all
drooled
over you.
For hours oh, on me and I never washed it. So a little embarrassing. Good thing it's radio though, so no one can see it.
Yeah, it's not really that embarrassing.
But
though.
Now they can picture it.
Yeah, I feel like that's a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Nephew's falling asleep on you.
So we have a fun show
today.
What's
up?
So it's Roger Badish's birthday.
At hey, all right.
So we're going to be celebrating that.
No, he's in there somewhere.
Yeah, he knows about it. He's pretty aware.
Yeah, he knows. I think it's his birthday. Yeah. Right. Yeah.